with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Possible to react to what you're saying in a very, very positive, constructive way. That's the way we all learn. That's what this is about.
This is the Quality News Network. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones went up more than 300 points just after today's open. Stocks closed up more than 230 points. We'll have the week's final numbers coming up in our business segment. In Huntington, Utah, the search for six miners who were trapped 11 days ago in a mine collapse has now been indefinitely suspended. Last night, three rescuers were killed and six others were injured after a cave-in occurred during their attempt to get to the trapped miners. The powerful 8.0 magnitude earthquake that struck Peru Wednesday has killed at least 510 people. 1,500 were wounded. There have been many aftershocks. The military is assisting in the relief effort, clearing rubble and handing out water. Responding to concerns about looting, Peru's president today appealed for calm. CNN reports there have now been 4,000 coalition military deaths in the Iraq war. The number of U.S. military casualties is 3,705 since the war began in March of 2003. The U.S. military says one American soldier was killed today north of Baghdad in fighting against Sunni insurgents who were holed up in a mosque. Also today, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki traveled to Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit. He is meeting with Sunni tribal leaders to build up support for a new government alliance. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced he has ordered the resumption of long-range strategic bomber flights to show Russia's military strength. Russia and China recently completed war games exercises on Russian soil for the first time. In Yuma, Arizona, a missing U.S. Marine Corps helicopter with five service people on board has been found. There were four fatalities and one survivor. Republican Representative Dennis Hassert announced today that he will not run for another term in Congress. The Illinois congressman had been Speaker of the House longer than any other Republican. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says he will leave the job sometime before the Bush presidency ends for financial reasons. Snow makes $168,000 a year. However, when he was a radio talk show host, he earned significantly more money. And there have been at least 41 heat-related deaths in the South and Midwest since the heat wave began last week. You're listening to QNN.
This is Beyonce. For a performer, a smile is an instant reward. And once you've seen the smiles on the faces of children at Shriners Hospitals, you'll know why the Shriners have been providing their world-renowned medical care to kids for over 80 years at absolutely no charge. At Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized services and treatments for kids with orthopedic, burn, or spinal cord problems. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Hurricane Dean has been upgraded to a Category 3 storm, and it could strengthen to a Category 5 hurricane by Monday, according to forecasters. It has hit the Caribbean islands, where one person has been killed, and it's heading towards the Gulf of Mexico. Tropical Storm Aaron caused widespread flooding in parts of Texas yesterday and was responsible for at least seven deaths. NASA has decided not to repair the gouge in the Space Shuttle Endeavour's tiles. The mission managers decided it would be too risky to ask the astronauts to do spacewalk repairs. The Federal Reserve cut the discount rate on loans to banks today by half a percentage point. The move is meant to stabilize financial markets. The Wall Street Journal reports that the Federal Trade Commission will appeal a court ruling that allowed Whole Foods Market to go ahead with its takeover of rival Wild Oats Market. The FTC had requested a block of the $565 million acquisition. And according to the 2008 U.S. News and World Report ranking of the best U.S. colleges, Princeton tops the list. Gold is trading at $666.80 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $71.98 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was up 233 points. The NASDAQ was up 54. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay! Talk to you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We have made it to Friday. We are live. We are, as usual, ahead of the curve. Wee, all the way home. Me and that mouse in my pocket. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and I'm mighty glad to be here. I hope you're as glad to be wherever you happen to be, and I hope that where that is cool and comfortable. It's a little bit better here in the employee sauna at the Head On Radio Network. Not quite as stifling as it has been of late. If you notice some difference in the sound quality right now, that is because I am sitting in the producer chair. Agnes is not here, and I am not in my proper position. I'm over here behind the microphone that doesn't have quite as many G-jaws and hootenannies on it. And so it sounds a little bit different, and you can hear a little bit more background noise. I apologize, and I hope it won't prove too much of a distraction. I'm also off the wagon tonight. Yes, for the first time in 3 weeks, I am drinking a can of pop. I've been a water-drinking fool lately. But today I said, screw it, I'm having me a root beer. It's Friday. Let it all hang out. So that's what I'm doing. And I mention that because of a study that came out that I found rather interesting. I think it was our good friend Cindy who sent me the link to this. And it's kind of baffling because, you know, we follow the studies where all the various and sundry scientists who are or were in one way or another associated with the Bush administration basically laid out for the American people how science and knowledge had been stifled in that deadly and knowledgeless vacuum, that hole in the corner of a dreary bit of space that is the White House. But one report has snuck out. And it's a presidential report on cancer. And it's just reading the report about it, and because this is journalism, and it comes from Reuters, I'm a little bit suspicious of it. I'm a little bit suspicious of this because I wonder what's missing. I wonder where the spin is. I wonder where, because you can, you know, if the Bush administration says the sky is blue, you have to go outside and look. Because lying is what these people do. Nonetheless, according to this story, and I'm reading straight from the text of the Reuters report, a new presidential report on cancer takes on not only tobacco companies, but the food industry, while calling on the federal government to cease being a purveyor of unhealthy foods and switch to policies that encourage Americans to eat vegetables and exercise. You can eat exercise? I mean, isn't that what that is? Are we having a bad journalism moment? Is it time for me to open journalism class? And switch to policies that encourage Americans to eat vegetables and exercise. That's what it says to me. Okay, I want you to eat your vegetables, and if you're done with your vegetables, don't quit. It's time to eat your exercise. Seriously, though, the report came out yesterday. And, you know, if it says something like this, you know it must have said a whole bunch more before it got watered down and Jesused up by the White House Office of Faith-Based Science and Research. Also urged changes in public and private insurance policies to encourage doctors to spend more time counseling patients on how to stay healthy by eating right, exercising, and avoiding tobacco. Well, that's not going to... Yeah, golly, Ned. Oh, okay. See, I have to wait till the light comes on. You know, just like the spare refrigerator where I keep all my root beer that I don't drink, I kind of got to open the door and tap it on the sidewall to make the light come on. Sometimes I got to the side of my head to get the light to come on for me. And there it is. This report is timed as an attack mechanism against the Children's Health Insurance Program legislation. Because you know that Chicken George fully intends to veto that program and let health insurance for some several million American children die in September. We don't need any new taxes. Because, of course, that thing contains an extra dollar a pack tax, the House version does, on cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Sure does. So this otherwise piece of solid advice will be used as an excuse to deny health insurance to several million American children, whom I'm sure Flush Flembaugh would refer to as poor children, because he makes so much fun of the word poor. The poor children. God, I hate that little bastard. This is a quote from the report. Ineffective policies in conjunction with limited regulation of sales and marketing in the food and beverage industry have spawned a culture that struggles to make healthy choices, a culture in dire need of change, said the report. You can get the whole thing and read it for yourself at P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, P as in Paul, pcp.cancer.gov. Among other things, they're suggesting that bad foods, pre-processed, no-good-for-you foods, be pulled from the school lunch programs of elementary and high schools, middle schools. Margaret Kripke of the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center is a member of the panel, and she said in a telephone interview with Reuters, "What became clear to me is that we simply don't have the political will to protect the public health." That had to become clear to you, Doc? That had to become clear to you? You didn't go into it recognizing that? recognizing that a country that pays tobacco farmers to grow tobacco and props up tobacco prices doesn't have the political will to protect public health? That's just dawning on you, Doc? I mean, I don't mean to seem like a jerk or anything, but that kind of surprises me. The letter to George Bush that accompanied this report said, "This country must not ignore its moral obligation to protect the health of all Americans. We can and must empower individuals to make healthy choices through appropriate policy and legislation, and the panel urges you to use the power of your office toward this life-saving goal." Sounds noble, doesn't it? I wonder how the good doctor is going to feel when he finds out that this is used as an excuse to take away health care coverage from several million American children. The report recommended much stricter control of the tobacco industry and urged Congress to authorize the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to regulate tobacco. Also supports an increased federal cigarette tax. That goes against what George Bush wants. It suggests the federal government require the elimination of unhealthy foods from school breakfast and lunch programs, and must cease being a purveyor of unhealthy foods that lead to disease and increased health care costs. They recommend the regulation of food advertising and changing agricultural support policies. This is another quote from the report. "We heavily subsidize the growth of foods, corn and soy, that in their processed forms, e.g., high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated corn and soybean oils, grain-fed cattle, are known contributors to obesity and associated chronic diseases, including cancer. The people who are doing the U.S. agricultural subsidies need to connect their subsidies with the policy on public health, and I don't think that's been done," said Ms. Kripke. "Fresh fruits and vegetables are not subsidized in the same way, and physical education classes in school have almost disappeared." She's right. She's right. Anyone who's read, and I keep talking about this book, and I keep hoping that people will go out and read it if you haven't yet. It's from a little over a year ago. Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Three Meals. And it lays out better than anything I've ever read the nature of our industrial food system. And so I recognize, well, let's see, what's in my root beer? Hold on here. Get the last little bit of backwash there. I don't want to dribble on the floor. Carbonated water. Bang! High fructose corn syrup. Caramel color, sodium benzoate. Love that sodium benzoate. Natural and artificial flavors. That's it? Natural and artificial flavors. I guess that's all the stuff that makes root beer taste like root beer. But carbonated water, high fructose corn syrup, no sugar in sight. Of course, I remember back in, what, the 70s when the purists were saying, "White sugar, it's a white devil." Well, they didn't know what was coming, did they? Agnes isn't here, so I've got munchkins wandering in and out of the studio. We'll have to deal with that as well. So I'm having a root beer this evening. I'm feeling really, really rotten about it because, pop's never been particularly. I'm sorry, soda or down south, Coke. What kind of Coke? Root beer, orange, grape. Pop has never been particularly good for one. And it is less good in copious quantities, but it is almost downright poison now because of the... And that's why I encourage people to read the Michael Pollan book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. He does as much as any human being can to explain to people the nature of how a piece of corn gets broken into high fructose corn syrup. Because it just doesn't exist naturally. It just doesn't. And you have to do things to corn that are all, that are bigger secrets than nuclear technology in some circles. There were places they would not let Mr. Pollen go into to find out what was done to the corn, because it's that secret. Corn is not, it's a form of alchemy what they do to get this stuff. And God Almighty, you know, we took that train trip and we were going through one train yard. This was back in early June. We were going through one rail yard and tank after tank after tank after tank after tank after tank. What, 5,000 gallons at a pop, I don't know, of high fructose corn syrup from, and it was stamped the Staley Company. Of course, that immediately resonated with me because I remember that the Chicago Bears were originally the Chicago, or were originally the Decatur Staleys. Most of the football team were workers from the Staley Syrup Plant in Decatur, Illinois. And they only later became the Chicago Bears. But they started out the Decatur Staleys, and I saw those Staley tanks. I thought of that. And then I realized it was, you know, just tank cars full of poison. Heading off to help American children become juvenile diabetics or help them eventually burn their pancreas and their adrenal or their Isles of Langerhans or wherever the hell insulin comes from. Help them burn those up. You know, at a relatively young age, so that a doctor can look at them and go, you know, you're pre-diabetic when they're 44 years old, like he did me. Because I had pretty good raisin. And dates. Raisins and dates. No, I was raised fairly well. My mother cooked nutritious foods. But there comes a time when, you succumb to the lure of fast food and junk food. And God knows that my college years were rife with that. You know, dorm food or McDonald's. McDonald's wins, trust me. So it's a little bit disturbing. It's a lot disturbing. Who am I kidding? But everything has some sort of processed soy and some sort of cracked up, busted up, molecularly monkeyed with version of number 2 field grade corn, and it's almost impossible to get away with, and it is bad, 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 bad for us. So there's a report out about it. That's a starting place. It is by no means where we're going to go with the rest of the program. On the other hand, it's a starting place for a lot of different conversations or a lot of different avenues of conversation, because there's another story out there that kind of dovetails with this. You might not initially see the connection, but I do. And let's see if I've got the right story here, because it does play in. Yeah, there it is. You know how the right wing is all. If the right wing, if you tell them you want to buy more bombs, more guns, yay, let's buy more guns and bombs. Okay, let's buy more food for the poor. No. And then you have to explain to them that this is part of an agricultural subsidy. That we're not doing anything nice for the poor by giving out food stamps. We're making sure that the farmers don't go broke, and it's okay because it's corporate welfare. And then the right wing goes, well, if we have to. Because after the 1980s and the excesses, the evil right wing, libertarian excesses of the Reagan administration, we drove just about all the real farmers out of business. And they've been replaced by monstrous corporate farms run by ConAgra and Archer Daniels Midland and Monsanto and the like. And so we're propping them up now with what goes into the food stamp budget. Well, guess what? That food stamp budget, that piddling, pissant food stamp budget that provides roughly $3 a day for eating to anyone who is on it, $3 a day, no kidding. Babies, grown-ups, don't matter, $3 a day. If everybody who was entitled to food stamps got them, that would be reduced to about $1.50 a day. Really. A story dated the 14th, Tuesday, out of McClatchy Newspapers. The author, Rob Hotakkinen, finds that half of the nation's eligible poor aren't getting the food stamps to which they're entitled. That is according to a study that was released on Tuesday. The highest participation in the food stamp program, highest participation rate in 2004, and that's the last date for which accurate and full data is available, was the District of Columbia at 71.8%. That was the highest participation rate. Missouri ranked first among the 50 states in getting food stamps to its low-income residents. Nevada ranked last among states with 32% of its eligible residents, 32% getting food stamps. The median number then, 50.2% of the nation's qualified poor received food stamps in 2004. Greg Speeter is the executive director of the National Priorities Project. That's a nonprofit research group that examines the local impact of federal budget policies. They were responsible for the report. He said, we've got 35 million people in this country struggling to get enough food to eat, and 50% of all low-income people are not receiving the benefit that is intended to alleviate this food insecurity. I call BS. It's hunger. Alleviate this hunger. Oh, this is America. We don't have any hunger. Yeah, we do. And plenty of it. The Department of Agriculture, see, that should tell you something. The food stamp program is run by the Department of Agriculture because the food stamp program is a form of corporate welfare that just happens to be one of the very, almost, maybe the only form of corporate welfare that actually trickles down to poor folks. Food stamp program was founded in 1964, you know, back when we believed things like poor people needed food. Now, under Bush, Reagan, those thugs, it's the poor's people. It's the poor's job to go out there and let the rising tide lift their boats, even if they don't have a boat, and even if the tide comes in so fast it drowns them. It's the largest of the federal government's food and nutrition programs. The food stamp program is. It cost us. wait a minute. In 2004, the food stamp program cost $28.6 billion, or 1.2% of total federal spending. And it served 23.2 million people to the tune of feeding them $3 at the rate of $3 per day. Do you realize that? Do you realize that that is not three cans of soup per person per day? That's not three cans of soup. And I'm not talking about the highfalutin, really expensive Campbell's soup. I'm talking about the store brand stuff that off the shelf at Kroger or Food Lion or Publix or Fausto's or Wally World. That's not three cans of good soup per day. Our country that has unlimited funds when it comes to dropping bombs on mud huts and slaughtering up to 750,000 Iraqi civilians over the course of 4 years does not have the soul required to give 3 cans of soup per day to the poor. So, you know, Ms. Kerpke, Dr. Kerpke, down at MD Anderson Cancer Center, thanks for all the hard work on your little cancer report, honey. But I think you're whistling in the wind, at least as far as the poor are concerned. Because we don't have, we the people, via our elected representatives, don't care enough about each other to see to it that we have good food to eat. So the poor will go on eating poorly. Yeah, but Bob, we've got an obesity problem in the country. You ever see those pictures of starving people from around the world? They're not all skeletal. There's a whole bunch of them that are big. And that, too, is a function of malnutrition. No, Dr. Kripke, I don't think we care much about your report. I don't think we care much about processed soy or processed corn or trans fats or partially hydrogenated soybean, palm kernel, and cottonseed oil. No, I don't think we care about it at all, because we barely care whether the poor eat at all. In 2004, the food stamp program cost $28.6 billion to underfeed America's poor, and only half of them at that. On the other hand, in the last week, we have pumped... No, screw the last week. How about in the last 3 days, we've pumped, what? $36 billion? $36 billion down the corporate welfare rat hole in New York City? No insult against New Yorkers. I'm talking about Wall Street. And what are the news reports? Oh, Wall Street rebounded today! Woo! Yeah, Wall Street got back points. Wall Street is still climbing back to net zero. And it's not better yet, and it's not necessarily getting better. I'm pretty sure of this. $36 billion. And like I said last night, who got the check? Well, we've got all this, we've got to tighten our belts, we're in a deficit.
No new taxes.
But you know what? If George Bush's buddies at Countrywide Home Lending are in a fix, George is there to bail them out. In essence, what the Federal Reserve did is it provided a reward for the bad behavior of the investor class that propped up the phony baloney pie in the sky stuff that was being engaged in on Wall Street. All right, you know the deal. I'm behind the producer desk this evening, so I don't have the first clue who is on the phone, so we're just going to find out. Hey, who have I got?
Susan in Columbia City.
Hey, Susan, how are you, dear?
Well, tired. I was canning all day yesterday.
Well, I didn't want to rat you out. People were asking about you in the chat room, and I said you were otherwise engaged.
Yeah, well, I've been slaving away over a hot canner, and this weekend I get to go right back to it.
Water bath or pressure?
Pressure. I'm doing veggies.
Yep. No way of getting around the pressure canner if you're doing the veggies.
Yeah. In a way, actually, I prefer the pressure canner because even with fruit, because it's faster in the long run, especially if you're running two canners like I do. I have one cooling off while I'm working on the other one. But the reason I called in is because what you've been talking about has been dovetailing in really well with what I've been doing. I'm canning potatoes. I'm putting up beans, carrots. I'm basically making sure that no matter what happens, we'll eat.
Now, is this stuff that you've gotten at a farmer's market or...
A combination. Some I grew, some I picked up at a local farm. All of it was cheap. You know, where else can you get Yukon Gold potatoes?
Oh, golly, I love those things.
Yeah, and you know how expensive they are in a grocery store, $1.50, $2 a pound?
Yeah.
Right? 69 cents a pound.
Holy cow.
They had just dug them up that morning.
Oh, no. Oh, those things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you cook those things, right? Oh, those are like candy.
Yeah, I'm basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to can them and use them in stews because they're so nicely flavored.
Yeah.
Soup and stew.
Can't beat that because $3 a day won't get you a pot of stew like what you're going to make.
Tell me about it. We're on food stamps and there's, let me see, I think we get $30 a month.
How much?
$30 a month.
Jesus. Why bother?
Well,
I don't mean y'all. I mean, you know,
helps. Yeah.
Yeah, everything helps, but.
Yeah, if nothing else, it'll buy stew meat.
Yeah, it will, but it, I'm not harping at or on you,
but we know
that your wonderful husband Donald is a multiple veteran of multiple wars. He's a World War II veteran. He's an octogenarian.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And America doesn't think
84.
Yeah, America doesn't think enough of him to see to it that under dire circumstances, but he eats every day.
Nope. The closest thing he's gotten from the government is the state of Oregon, because he is a veteran and his age and his income, he can go fishing for salmon without buying the expensive part of the fishing license.
Well, hot diggity.
Hot damn. Of course, the fact that you need a boat to bag of salmon is minor detail, which we do not have.
Right. Yeah, that's no easy fight.
No.
I mean, where you are, at least theoretically, the salmon, you know, grow to be of decent size. But then again, Dick Cheney killed the salmon in 2004, right?
He killed a good bunch of them, yeah. But there are three or four different salmon runs. The thing is, with the logging regulations in force now, which the Bushies have put in, which means have added guys, anything you want, what they've done is raising the temperature of the water in the streams. That means the fish are not going to come back to spawn because the water is too warm. Salmon need cold water. That means the wild runs are disappearing.
Well, salmon need cool water, so do trout. You know, we stock streams here in West Virginia. There's something, and maybe other states are familiar with it too, along about January, February, March, there's something that takes place around here called the Stock Truck Parade.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will see the West Virginia Department of... I'm not sure which department, EPA or Department of Agriculture or whatever. Maybe it's agriculture. The stock truck and a parade will form behind it of a bunch of people, and they're waiting to see what stream he goes to, and he goes and throws those trout out, and they're gone by the time before they hit the water.
Yeah.
And the ones that do survive and stay in there, once spring and summer starts coming on, they can't stand it because the water is too hot.
Yeah. Another thing we did was for fruit, we have a peach tree. It's not bearing yet, but sooner or later it will. And then we have two apple trees. And I have a weakness. Have you ever tasted an Asian pear?
Oh, yes, I have. Those are something,
okay.
Yeah.
The stores here charge $4 a pop for one of those.
They charge by the individual fruit and not by the pound?
By the fruit.
Wow.
They're expensive little puppies because they imported them from Japan.
Sure.
I said, bagged that, got on the internet, and ordered me a couple of Asian pear trees, and now I got more Asian pears than I can shake a stick at.
Oh, good for you.
You do it, you know. And, you know, in case you're thinking, well, she's got land and all this stuff. I'm living on a city lot, 50 by 100 feet, and most of that land is being taken up by A, the house, and B, the rose bushes. So what little is left is I've got a bunch of beans and peas growing up against the shed. I've got my dwarf fruit trees. I've got two apple trees, but they're what are called columnar apple trees. They're only 2 feet wide.
Yes, yeah, so they grow up as opposed to out.
Exactly. And so I go along, anything that's, you know, bred to be small but still do what I need it to do, I've got. And it's not that expensive. Those Asian pear trees cost me $20.
Oh, there's here, giving away free advertising. I don't know who you deal with living in the western United States, and it's a little bit different, western versus eastern. But I've dealt with, in the past, where we used to live, I dealt with a company called Miller Nurseries of Canandaigua, New York. And
no,
they,
I go to, yeah.
Go, well, the nice thing about these people is if it doesn't grow, they'll send you a new one. They're that hardcore about it.
Yeah, any reputable mail order nursery will do the same. I went through Stark Brothers to get mine.
Well, when I was a little kid, we got the Stark Brothers catalog all the time because my mother had planted. They're gone now, but my mother had planted, when she was much younger, she'd planted Stark Brothers fruit trees and berry bushes and such all over this property.
Yeah. And the only thing that you cannot buy in Oregon is you cannot get a filbert tree from Stark Brothers. They won't. It's illegal to ship it into Oregon because of the filbert orchard industry here in Oregon.
Oh, really? Well, oh, how about that? A little bit of protectionism then.
Uh-huh, sure.
That's interesting. Good. See, it's illegal for me to order a gooseberry bush. I grew up...
Right, we've got tons of them.
when I was a little kid, we would come up here on vacation, Susan, and my grandmother had gooseberry bushes out by the tool shed. Mm-hmm. And if we were lucky enough to be here when those things came ripe, my cousins and I would get into fist fights over them because they were so good. And I got to thinking I'd like to have some, and I checked, and it's illegal to order them. It's illegal to have them here because of something called white pine blister rot.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. And I think I read an article on the net a while back that there is evidence that the gooseberries are getting a bum rap.
Well, what it may be, but the theory is that the birds come and eat the gooseberries, and God help the bird that I catch on a gooseberry bush. that's what pellet guns are for. But the birds eat the gooseberries, and it doesn't do anything to them. But then, and the white pine blister rot doesn't do anything to the gooseberry bush. But then they go and roost in a white pine tree and do what birds do in their nest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about raising baby birdies. And that will kill white pines stump dead.
That's possible. You know, you can find these little truck farms all over the country. And what they do is they have, you know, just look in your local classifieds for U-picks.
Yeah.
And odds are you'll not only be able to get U-pick, but also pre-picked. Now, my health isn't that great. My husband's health isn't that great. So we walk in and we pay a few cents more a pound and buy the pre-picked stuff. If we want to go out and dig it up ourselves, we get it even cheaper.
Yeah, you know, of course, a lot of this is dependent, and you mentioning that reminds me of something that I saw earlier this year. There's a lot of U-pick strawberry farms in the South. And
there's a ton of them here in the Northwest.
And I would drive by them, and it looked like it was a time when I would have expected them to be in business. But, you know, boarded up, shut down.
Yeah.
Nothing.
A lot of them are plowing under their fields here.
Well, they had been, in this instance, they had been killed by the late frost and then burned up by the beginning of the drought conditions.
Mm-hmm. The weather here, it can be really iffy. Some years you will get it super, super, and you'll make a mint on the strawberries. Other years you're going to lose your shirt. And strictly because of weather. It'll be raining too much, and the fruit will rot on the vine. Or it will be too dry. Or you won't be able to get people to harvest.
Oh, well, you know, that's... We can't have... Well, you know the harvester problem. What is it? I saw a statistic the other day. Over 50% of the people who pick the crops in the United States are the so-called illegals.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, but those pasty-faced, doughy white people who hate brown people and Mexicans and so forth, and people who speak Spanish, their hatred stops at the dinner table, I think. And if you told them that they couldn't have any fresh lettuce or they couldn't have any oranges or tomatoes or whatever, well, why not? Well, because you threw the people who were picking them out of the country. Well, that ain't right.
It's kind of funny because when I was growing up, that's how I got my spending money. Was I'd go out in strawberry fields. All of us kids, the fields around where I grew up, they weren't harvested by people, migrant workers. They were harvested by kids, teenagers.
So are we short on teenagers, or are we short on teenagers who are willing to work?
You got it.
Well, I said two things. Which one's it?
I think in a big part, it's we're short on teenagers who are willing to go out and do, let's face it, it's coolie labor.
Yeah, but
I don't think the teenagers today are willing to do it.
You know, I think back to my own misspent youth, and I remember a few summers spent putting up hay. You know, you follow the baler, you pick up the hay, you throw it on the truck. You'd get the truck, you'd go to the barn, and a couple of people in the loft of the barn, a couple of people on the truck, these weren't rolls. This was back when it was bales.
Yeah, bales.
And I remember the first time I did that, I was probably, 14 years old?
And you hurt in places you didn't
know. I hurt in places I didn't know I had, yeah. But it was mighty refreshing, and frankly, I remember one of the grown-ups pulling me aside at one point and just kind of looking around, and I wondered what was up, and he looks around and he says, "Here, kid," and gives me a can of ice cold beer. And it was heaven on earth. Mark Levine was talking about not an apple or anything, the fruit of the knowledge, tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Man, it fell right off the tree to me.
Yeah.
And I suddenly understand, Kool-Aid, nah. Soda pop, nah. Because the reason beer has lasted for all these, yay, verily, all these many, many...
Because it quenches your thirst.
It replaces the electrolytes in your body. Before there was ever Gatorade, there was beer.
Yeah. And, but you would go out there and to these strawberry fields, and you'd have to do this bent over.
Oh, the bend over stuff is just, yeah.
Yeah. So you'd go down these rows, picking these low things, all in a bent over, stooped over position. And then you get to the end of the row, and you couldn't straighten up.
So were you putting it into like a cloth shoulder bag, or were you putting it into a bucket?
You had a flat with these little square...
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it was that far advanced.
And
all
you
right.
were paid by the flat. So you just scooted the flat along.
Yeah. Okay.
And you brought it back, got your slip, got another flat, off you went again. And you did this all day long, and then when that was done, you got on the bus, and it took you back to where it picked you up. Generally, it was the local school. And then you would go home and turn the hose on yourself. I wasn't into beer at the time. And treat yourself for sunburn.
Yeah, a sunburnt back and neck and right.
Oh, hey, I've got portions of my back that are permanently damaged from picking strawberries because the breeze took the tail of my shirt up.
Yeah.
And so the lower part of my back is permanently, the skin is permanently damaged from sunburn. And we would go picking bush beans. Same thing, same deal. You're paid by the box. And that's how us kids got our money. If you were a girl, you were fortunate enough after a certain age to be able to babysit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the farm deal was girls, boys, anything. I think you had to be 12 at least. And that's what we did in the summertime. It kept us out of trouble, too. You were too tired to go out and cause trouble.
Yeah. Well, it made the pleasure... It made rest sitting and resting a pleasurable experience, and you were a lot less prone to say something like, "I'm bored." I know my father and mother used to hate it when I would use that phrase because my children will pull it out on me now, and I just want to look at them and, well, you know, I can lock you in the basement, and you can be bored there too.
I had a standing answer for "I'm bored." Here's a book. Read it.
Well, that's what I've gotten to where I do now too, and I dropped a grown-up book on Ferg the other day, Tom Holland's Persian Fire, and I said I don't want to hear bored from you again until you're at the end of the book, and then I've got another one after that.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, a little bit later he comes over and he points at a word and he says, "Sorry, Dad, got to have some help." And I said, "Artaxerxes." He goes, "That's okay, I got it." A little bit later, a day later, I finished the first chapter. I said, "Okay, come in here, hand me the book." I looked at the first chapter. I said, "Start talking." And he tells me what's in the first chapter. And I'm a proud daddy.
Yep. You're just like me. You are, with malice aforethought, turning your kids into bookworms.
Trying.
I don't necessarily care for what my son reads, but my daughter, she reads anything. She's just like me. She's compulsive about it.
Oh yeah, I got to read something before I fall asleep, or I'll just lay there and stare at the ceiling all night.
Oh, you too? You got that monkey on your back? No, I can't go to sleep.
Oh, the monkey's bigger than I am, Susan.
Yeah, I've been known to read the phone book.
I got something worse right now. I've hesitated to tell people this story because people are going to go, "Bob, my lovely wife." And you know how it is, Susan. If you've got this monkey, if the book comes in the door, the book gets read.
Yes.
Right?
Generally by me first because I read fastest.
Well, that's my job here.
And then I hand it to my husband.
Agnes walks in the door, and she's been down at the public library, and she always browses the cutout bin.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "I've got you a surprise. Close your eyes and hold out your hands." And I do, and I open my eyes, and what am I looking at but 1,300 pages of Ayn Rand.
God, Ayn Rand? Geez.
She got me Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, yuck.
And I looked at her and I said, "Oh, honey, I love you, but if you had any idea what you've just done to me."
Yes, I read that, when I was, I think about 17, and I said, "What a crock."
Well, it was. You know, it's
exact words, but...
It's such a hypocritical... It's an exercise in hypocrisy is what it is.
Yeah. And besides that, it's not all that great a fiction either.
But you know what? I have decided, having read through it, I'm convinced now that one of yours and my favorite writers of science fiction, I'm convinced that Robert Heinlein must have read her extensively.
Oh, I'm sure he did. He was the science fiction version of Rand. Politically, he was really strange. But the thing was,
but
was
the funny, you know, the funny thing with
AM into putting down a story.
I don't know. Maybe see, I had to read this thing in college. That's what made it so awful. I had to read it in college for a grade years ago when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Me both.
And so here I am going back through it, going, oh, Jesus, honey, you know, because I remember all of these people that just made me want to put a brick through a window. And I remember thinking that, and it's stuff that's coming back to me. It's like accessing a portion of the hard drive that you thought had been that hadn't been defragged in a while.
The Taggart brother, the older, the one that ended up inheriting the railroad instead of the sister.
Yeah. Jim. Well, yeah, all of them. All of them, though.
I wanted to slap him upside the head.
All of them, though. What's interesting, though, is, you know, she emigrated from Russia, and we'll have the whole great big Ayn Rand discussion someday, maybe. She had immigrated from Russia, and she writes this book. It's published in 1957. She's been in the United States since 1924. And in that whole time that she's developing this whopping big political philosophy, she never bothered to figure out what the structure of the United States federal government was. Because you go all the way through Atlas Shrugged, there's no president of the United States.
No.
Everything is just legislated.
Yeah.
And there, you know, like there's a prime minister or something. Like, sister, you know. Oh yeah, it was just. Blech. And you know,
yeah. I've had.
But I repeat myself. Blech.
Yeah, I've had people try and get me to read other stuff by her, and I just look at them and say, no, thanks, I don't.
Well, I'm at a point now. If anybody, and I was that way during college too. Anybody tells me I got to read Ayn Rand, I'll ask them where I need to go to take the ass kicking instead, because I will take it instead of reading Ayn Rand.
Yeah, you and me both. To me, there's so many other books that I could be reading that are actually worth something.
But people treat that woman like she was some sort of highbrow, high-brained philosopher.
No, she just laid out a good. Agnes is at the board, so she could. I can say it. She could lay on the bullshit, so it sounded good, and made you want to eat it. But it was still bullshit.
Yeah, bunches of it. Absolute bunches of it. Ugh. You know, it's funny that, well, I'm not going to do it. I'm absolutely not going to do it. I'll tell you what, Susan, we're up against the top of the hour, and I am going to make sure that I do my news this evening.
Okay.
You know what I may do? Check back, and I'll go ahead and make this announcement now. I threatened earlier in the week to create the front porch conversation tonight.
Count me in.
I'm going to do it. So I can put as many as six different people on the line together. And, you know, for once, instead of chatting in the chat room, you can talk to each other.
Oh, cool.
You know, just we'll ring off and we'll do the news, but jump back in line and we'll see if I've got, you know, if nobody wants to play, that's cool, too.
Okay.
All right. So I'll be talking to you in a little bit, most likely.
Okay, Doc.
Bye now, Susan. Are you... You up for something like that? Well, you know the phone number. 304-658-5453. Or toll-free 877, the number 4, head-on. 877, the numeral 4, head-on. And we will have ourselves a good old-fashioned hillbilly front porch jaw. That's what it is. It's jawing, by the way. It's jawing. You up for it? Now, you'll have to fight to get a word in edgewise, because there's going to be a whole bunch of you going at the same time, and it's not like a chat room where everything's, one thing flows after another. No. This is wildly different from any of that. And barring that as well, the thing that I'd really planned, instead of food, I always come around to food, I'd actually planned on doing some lawyer and stuff, because with the Padilla verdict and a couple of other stories that are out there, it sort of looked like a story worth doing. And there's some horrifying stuff It's always horrifying. It's, you know, it's ropes and razor blades night on Head On with Bob Kincaid. Right? Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. So that's the direction that I'm a mind to go in. And, brother, now I got to find a piece of bumper music. You know, I hate operating without a producer. Oh, this just drives me nuts. Well, let's find somebody. No, don't like that. Don't like that. Don't like that. Oh, screw it. Somebody will be happy with this. We'll be back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. On Wall Street today, stocks shot up in response to the Fed's lowering of a key interest rate. The Dow soared more than 300 points just after opening. We'll have the closing numbers coming up in our business segment. The death toll from Peru's powerful magnitude 8 earthquake Wednesday rose to at least 510. The military has joined the relief effort, clearing rubble by hand in many cases in an attempt to dig out more possible survivors. Two more aftershocks rattled survivors today, one a magnitude 5.9. Water, electricity, and communication systems are still down. Another cave-in at the Huntington, Utah mine killed three miners last night who were part of the rescue effort. The trio was digging to try and reach a group of six of their co-workers trapped by a collapse 11 days ago. Officials suspended the underground rescue effort indefinitely. North of Baghdad, fighting against Sunni insurgents holed up in a mosque killed an American soldier today. CNN reports there have now been 4,000 coalition military deaths in the Iraq war. The number of U.S. military casualties is 3,705 since the war began in March of 2003. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki traveled to Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit to meet with Sunni tribal leaders today. Al-Maliki and his fellow Shiites are now working with Iraqi Kurdish leaders, but Sunni leaders have pulled away from the new government alliance. Five former South African officials in the apartheid era have admitted they plotted to kill a prominent black activist in 1989. As part of their plea deal, the men received suspended prison sentences. The plot was to lace the man's underclothes with a nerve toxin. In Richmond, Virginia, two co-defendants in the Michael Vick dogfighting case pleaded guilty this morning. The statement they signed says the Atlanta Falcons quarterback personally took part in killing at least eight dogs. If Vick fails to accept a plea agreement, Monday he'll likely face a grand jury bringing even more serious charges against him. Republican Representative Dennis Hastert announced today that he will not run for another term in Congress. The Illinois congressman had been Speaker of the House longer than any other Republican. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says he'll leave the job sometime before the Bush presidency ends for financial reasons. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, coming up.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher, and you tell her you're too tired to look for it. I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
In Texas, Tropical Storm Erin left widespread flooding in her wake. Local media is blaming the storm for at least 7 deaths. Hurricane Dean has been upgraded to a Category 3 storm, and it could strengthen to a Category 5 hurricane by Monday. That's according to forecasters. It has hit the Caribbean islands already, where one person's been killed, and is heading toward the Gulf of Mexico. Dean could bring 150-mile-an-hour maximum sustained winds. NASA is considering bringing the space shuttle home a day early to avoid any bad effects of Hurricane Dean. Officials have also decided not to repair a gouge in the space shuttle Endeavour's tiles, saying the risk of a spacewalk would be greater than that of returning with the ship as is. The FDA warns nursing mothers who take codeine that they should check their infants for sleepiness or signs of a possible overdose. And as we reported earlier, the Federal Reserve cut the discount rate on loans to banks today by 0.5 percentage point to 5.75%. The move is meant to stabilize the financial markets. Experts say it did just that and even sent stocks worldwide on a strong upswing. Gold is currently trading at $666.80 an ounce. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $71.98. a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 233 points at 13,079. The NASDAQ closed up 54 and the S&P up 35.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's do another hour. What do you say? Or as they used to say on doubleheader day at the old ball yard, let's play two. Sound good to you? Sounds good to me. Listen, any technical screw-ups tonight are entirely my own. For those of you who might not have caught it, Agnes is not producing tonight. She's dealing with domestic tranquility issues. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, for at least temporary purposes, Lorelai, our eldest, and the baby, and the baby's father, are moving in. And we're going to try to help them get things squared around and straightened up and get back to something resembling a path toward a future. So Agnes is over helping them schlep stuff over to here. And hence, not behind the desk here. Plans were for her to be here, but plans don't always work out as we might like for them to. Okay, let's start this little merry-go-round. Eric is calling from Vermont. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Welcome to the program. Thank you very much, sir. Calling from Vermont. Yes, you're right. I have a little problem hearing your feed coming into my telephone line, so I apologize for that. I have a little problem with many things right now. I'd like to talk about an issue we were talking about perhaps 30 to 40 minutes ago regarding the relationship between Russia, perhaps China, and some of the Mideast, South Asian in between countries that mm-hmm. have to do with a little project that they may be doing right now. They call it kind of a peaceful mission, so on and so forth. I can remember like 3 or 4 years ago that Vladimir Putin, that was the gentleman that Mr. Bush could, he could see the soul in his eyes.
Yeah, they were soulmates, weren't they?
I beg your pardon?
I said they were soulmates, weren't they?
Well, I don't know about that. I didn't hear that, and I didn't hear Tony Snow say that on a press conference or any previous press announcer for the president, but there seemed to be some sort of connection there that Bush was relating to the American people. Now, I would hate to think the American people were so deceived by some sort of false impression that Vladimir Putin would stand up to President Bush for protecting the corporate American structure of the United States and the corporate media for his behalf. Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not standing up for Vladimir Putin, but, I mean, he is the controller of his country, and he's not going to sit there and watch his country go down the drain while our imperialist American corporations are controlling our government to the extent that they are controlling President Bush and his administration and a number of members of Congress to go on into for this little worldwide global thing that we have that goes back to a Bill Clinton NAFTA, present, whatever kind of thing. You know, I mean, when you hear that the Wall Street is going down because the consumer isn't buying enough goods to keep the Wall Street back up again, the high profits of the corporations, they're throwing all that money to China, those commie son of a guns.
Yeah.
You know, and Fidel Castro is still a commie son of a gun. But gosh darn it, those commies over in China, they're good guys because they're playing the game with our corporations where Fidel Castro isn't. So it's not really a matter of communism. And I don't know, I'm just going to let you take the ball and I'll feed back when you want me to.
Well, Eric, your mention of Fidel Castro sort of jogged my mind because I saw a story, 2 days ago? 3 days ago, maybe, where one of the big online travel companies, maybe it was Travelocity. Are you familiar with them?
Yes, sir.
Travelocity just paid like a $182,000 fine for unauthorized trips to Cuba.
Oh, my God. And then they're doing something to Michael Moore?
Yeah.
How could they possibly do that when Michael Moore was actually trying to get to Guantanamo to get help for 9/11 rescue people that were on site in 2001 on 9/11, and they're going to do that to Michael Moore, and then they're going to, oh, my God, I'm sorry.
Well, no, Travelocity paid up. I guess they felt like they were guilty or some such. But what's so frustrating out of this is that unauthorized travel to Cuba, and it can cost the company. And all they did was, you know, somebody went in and they booked a flight from, you know, I don't know, Toronto to Havana, okay? But the federal government said, oh, bad, bad, bad. But you're absolutely right. What about travel to China? They're communists, too, but we're trading with them. And that's the trick, Eric. You know, the real con in all of this is that China is no more communist than I am. China is, we have to keep calling them communist because whenever we need to demonize them, you know, whenever they start poisoning our children, our pets, our kids, whatever, we call them the communist Chinese. But the fact of the matter is, China is running a crony capitalism experiment gone absolutely wild, aren't they? I mean, isn't that what it looks like to you?
I don't know. I mean, if we were so afraid of the communists during the Vietnam War, we're talking the domino theory back in Vietnam, and there's still people alive today thinking that all those little long-haired hippies back in the 60s, they were the real problem why we couldn't win that war. I mean, is winning a war more important than admitting to a principle of a failed policy like we had in Vietnam? Or maybe we have a failed policy in Iraq today? I mean, we're going all over the board here. I'm sorry, but...
No, that's okay. That's okay. Keep going, man.
I mean, it's really ridiculous that we say that we have a domino theory, and that if the Chinese and the Russians were going to take over with Ho Chi Minh, that asked the Americans for help right after World War II, and we denied Ho Chi Minh North Vietnamese, and we deny them that help. What the heck are we talking about? Does it sound like a lot of propaganda that's not only been existent within the last 7 years, or perhaps maybe since World War II, or perhaps since going back before then? Because there certainly doesn't seem as though there was a domino theory that if Vietnam fell, then everything else in Southeast Asia is going to fall.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
Then, and we got another problem now, except we have a whole different sociological, political problem in Iraq, Afghanistan, and everything else, and the economic situation is so obscure. We don't have leadership in this country, and I don't know with all the politicians whether we have any people that philosophically have any really good global plans to isolate our country from our dangers, to be able to stabilize the other sections of the world in order to find peace for this country and our nation.
I would submit to you that one guy does, but we can't even get people to take him seriously. And that, of course, is Dennis Kucinich. You know, long before it ever occurred to any of the people who ran for president on the Democratic ticket in 2004, before it ever occurred to anybody who's running now, Dennis Kucinich has been talking about not free trade but fair trade. And beginning with a policy like that can do some of what you just described. Unfortunately, the problem lies in getting someone to think, you know, because they just, I don't understand. It's the media, or I don't know, somebody behind the media, but he does. These are brilliant ideas. There's another one floating around out there that I heard about today, and nobody even acts like it exists, Eric.
Well, we need to look for solutions. We need to look for leadership. Leadership is not just an ideological, philosophically, politically correct media. Correct thing that you throw out to the public and say, well, how are they going to catch that ball? Leadership is telling the American people, this is what we need to do, and this is what we need to do now. This is what we should have done 40 or some odd years ago. And it has a lot to do with creating a lot of energy alternatives so we don't get into the war and have the corporations control our government. It has a lot to do with a lot of things that are more complicated than a 3, 4, 8, 10, 15-minute phone call that I might have with you.
Well, that's true, too. But speaking of phone calls, hold on just a minute. I mentioned starting the front porch conversation. Let's bring another conversant into this process, if we can, if this actually works. Kate is with us.
Hi, Kate.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Bob.
How are you?
There's a line here that's on the chat room that says that you're not getting, people aren't getting in on the toll-free number. Is that because we're tying up the line?
Probably something.
I got in.
I know. I did too, Eric.
They should be getting in.
Okay. I don't know what it meant. I had to come to the neighbors to call in today because my phone is doing what it does so well. So, and I'm surprised that I don't want to be in on this conversation because all this crap about leadership. No, Eric, I don't mean that you're crap, but I mean the beginning of this whole conversation back to Rand. I don't pay any attention to this stuff because who is it? Is it David or Luke that said smoke and mirrors?
Well, actually, our good friend David in Tennessee says it's all wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
It's all wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when Rove leaves the White House in tears, that's a big, that's more smoke and mirrors because something else really, really, really huge is going on in the background, behind the curtain, somewhere. Every time we get a big media flap, there's something going on that we don't know about because we're not paying attention because people don't get the right amount of news like we used to. You know, I mean, we don't get reporting, we don't get accuracy, we don't have journalists anymore. The media is all embedded in Iraq, and we don't know what's going on over there, and we don't know what's going on the planet. And so I just can't focus on one little area. I don't shop at Walmart, I don't buy anything, so I don't have any money, so I don't buy nothing. You know? Anyway, but I did want to say, and I appreciate you, you're bringing up the topic, Eric. It's food for a whole bunch of people who have a whole bunch of more debating skills than I do in that field of politics. And I had a remark to make about you. I didn't know where the Atlas Shrugged came from. That was so cool. bless her heart. Oh, Bob. Agnes brought home Atlas Shrugged. Every time she brings home a book, Bob has to go read it, and she brought home Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, and it happens to be one of my favorite books, because part of it's just hokey, part of it's really good fiction, really bad sex, but good fiction, and I love railroads, and so...
we really are. Agnes and I have decided that the big fight scene between the two rivals for the heroine's affections, the big slap scene.
Going, Hank. Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna do a video of that with Agnes making all the faces, while I do the text. Because I read it the other night, and I promised her. I said, henceforward, I will never criticize you ever, 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 ever again for those god awful bodice rippers that you read.
Well, anyway, I did want to say before, I don't know how this phone connection is going to work because I'm directly, it's my neighbors directly north of me, so I might get hung up on any minute. I wanted to, just the idea that we can have a forum like this and have a three-way and a 20-way in the chat and the...
Well, I've got a five-way going here if we want to bring people on.
Well, let me just finish my sentence then.
Okay.
Short paragraph. To everybody who's listening and lurking in the background and behind the curtain and on the party lines, Bob mentioned the other night that we weren't close to having September paid for, that we pulled out August really well, and that was a big relief to Wayne and all the people who have their own shows and to Bob and Agnes and whatever. So, if I remember right, he said that September was sadly lacking, and I just am hoping that people really would honor this, the donations for September. If we could just get September taken care of before the end of this month and give these people a break so they know that they're going to go on the air. I heard Joe say the other day, we are going to stay on the air, aren't we? And that makes me feel really bad. I shudder.
Well, we will. I mean, like I said, until they turn everything off, we will be here every night. Day.
But then when I hear things like the whatever movie just came out last, whatever, Born, I don't know, some movie, they do, it opened and it did $71 billion the first opening night. I thought, you know, if people are going to movies, could you not go to a movie and send the $12 that you're paying for the ticket and the $40 you're paying for popcorn, could you send it to Head On?
I did the calculations, Kate, and what I came up with is as of right now, I think we're at roughly $650.
And we need how much?
Anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000.
Okay. There's $10, $15, $20. A drive-through twice at Starbucks would be a nice donation. I mean, people say they don't have the money, and I mean, I know we don't, but I just send the money in so we can stay on the air for September. That's all.
Excuse
I care
me,
about.
Kate and Bob.
Yeah.
Pardon me. I've been a very big supporter of the Guy James Show, and I have.
And I'm glad you are.
I love Guy. I mean, he's been so great the last 4 years for me, and I have donated quite a bit. I'm in a position where I have a little extra bucks to spend that some other people don't. But no matter how meager your funds are, if you can just put just a little bit in the pocket someplace so that we can have some real news and some real information, you know, to spread among the American people, it's really important, like Kate said. And for the Head On Network and for Guy and you, it's really important. Don't feel like humbled because maybe you can only give like even $1 $5, you know, whatever it is. You know, like, I'm starting to sound like PBS here for a fundraising thing, but
yeah,
it doesn't
I
really
know.
Matter how much or how little you give.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought I'd bring it up, Eric, because Bob hates doing this, and he just does such a crappy job. He never makes anybody cry or sends any money. And, I mean, evidently he's not doing a good enough job.
Yeah, but wait till we get video going and my mascara starts running.
I don't want, Bob, I don't want to see you on video. I don't know. I just wanted to help out. I guess I know you don't. You've said many times you don't like doing that. You don't do it well. And so I thought, well, why
well,
don't I just
it's not begging for money, Kate.
It's not really important need
to have people supported as doing a really great job that reference what their points are and can point people to say, yes, this is really what happened. This is the reference here. It's not like Fox Network. It's not like sitting to the little mini tube where you get little sign about bites here and there and so on and so forth. It's like you can actually listen to these people and send them emails and say, well, where did you get that reference? And by the matter of fact, they will send you something back. And if they get it wrong, they will sit there and apologize. Or they'll get it right the next time they're on the air and correct their problem.
Let's continue the adventure here. Let's see if I can make the buttons keep working, folks. Kate, Eric, I have no idea who's on line three, but we're about to find out. Who's there?
Welcome to my nightmare.
who we got? Hello?
I don't recognize the voice.
Eric, I got you.
I'm here.
Kate, I got you. Is there anybody on line three? Hello, just brought you aboard.
Hey.
Who was the
nightmare?
Hey. Who?
Introduce yourself.
Who?
I thought someone else was online.
Okay, David, you're okay. So we got.
I didn't even hear a click or any static noise or anything that
it's
time.
It's David from Maine.
God, I had a pour away in the chat room about an hour and a half ago. Here we go again.
Yeah, this is David. What's up?
Well, I was listening to your thing about the funding and everything, and I think what's needed here, and I think it's something that you would consider. I would look into getting a Business Plan Pro and mapping it out. You can probably find it online someplace. I'm not suggesting anything. But you can probably find Business Plan Pro, and when you see that program, Bob, it's going to knock you out. What it'll do is it'll map out a system so when venture capitalists look at the diagrams and bar graphs and what they're looking at, they can see it statistically. What kind of audience you have, and basically, it's a focus point. It's something for people to look at rather than just talk about. And I think that's a problem, a big problem on a lot of progressive causes. They don't do this, and I notice a lot of people who are succeeding on my end, they go through this process, and you need to start doing that.
Is this something that's online for the listeners, or is it David, or is it for the network structure?
It's for every business you want to start up. We need to start develop. If you want to get venture capitalists interested, the first thing you got to do is you got to seriously map out every little thing, and it is kind of a painstaking process in the beginning.
I hate writing business plans, but I can do it, yeah.
But Business Plan Pro is an amazing tool that has helped a lot of businesses, and it's not referenced enough. But I'm going to reference it tonight. Business Plan Pro has helped a lot of businesses get off the ground because when they see those bars and graphs and when they see the audience and the traffic and everything in a form, in a PowerPoint presentation, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. with bells and whistles, it gets things humming, believe me.
And David, I understand that. Let me point out one thing, however, and this isn't a power issue or an ego issue or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gone chasing after some venture money, and I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I understand what's involved.
Right.
One of the problems you run up against, however, is that you build something that's really cool and that people are really responding to well.
Right.
And you want to grow it, and you need a little. But the next thing you know, the venture capitalist or group or whatever says, "Look, I'll take the whole thing."
That's why you go after like the
or they want editorial
the eccentric type of people. They're investors out there, Bob. It's just that they don't know about. And I keep referencing this to a lot of people, and the one thing that I constantly see is I ask people. I say, do you have a plan so that you can show someone? And you know the answer I get, Bob? It's always no. And you got to do it. You got to have those graphs. You got to have everything just right out there in a package that just wows people out.
Okay.
Everything starts from a seed of that. And believe me, we're in the 21st century, and there really is no excuse why anyone can do it. I can find that program in about 10 seconds, probably.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll certainly take a look at it. We've got a business plan.
Again, it's different when you say a business plan rather than, you know, a whole model vehicle on every single level. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Eric, do you have some thought on this?
Yeah, actually, I have a little thought, and I don't mean to be in a negative perspective at all, David. I know that there have been times when I have gotten within 2 days of getting a check to Guy James, for example, just to keep him on live air to say less about the Internet. And quite frankly, David, I have to admit, I really don't know about, you know, the program you're talking about, so I apologize.
Right.
But, I mean, basically, we have to keep these guys on air just to get on the stream. That's a difficult enough problem as it is. Then you have to compete with the Rush Limbaughs and everybody else who are incorporating bucks up the yin-yang to get them out into the real world where the real people can actually listen to them and not being part of the choir. And I'm not sure how to do that, and it's been like, you know, something a lot of people on a lot of blogs have been talking about for, you know, a number of years now, and, you know, I'm not putting what you're saying down at all because I really don't know terribly much about it, but, I mean,
if you have something
in that plan that you have,
right,
or that you have certain knowledge of, is there something in there that can push it out? Because pretty much a lot of people on these Internet blogs pretty much talk to the choir for the most part anymore. I mean,
right.
I can remember 3 or 4 years ago when actually Guy James, for example, who is my big hero on this network, he was down in West Florida, and he was sitting there going bat to bat against all these Rush Limbaugh nuts, and it was like actually live. But I mean, he was still out there where he could be heard by somebody other than a lot of the choir. And it's important to get the message out with the references to the people that can actually say, okay, you want to know what's going on, guys? It's almost like Radio Free America, not Radio Free Europe, as we had post-secondary war. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this.
I understand
what you're saying, Eric, and I think it's well taken. I think what we've got here is David saying, you know, use this program to develop what it is that you'll take to people, so that when you find the people and they say, "Do you have one?" you go, "Yeah, here it is." Right, David?
Right, and I also want to point out that another thing that a lot of people don't do enough is they don't find a lot of business references where a lot of companies are in the same situation. And I think a lot of people should, and if people are in the same situation listening, they should go to the search engines and just see where people started from zero and see how you can build and see how you can get better donating network set up. One of the things you might want to consider, Bob, is you might want to consider I know Todd Rundgren did this. He financed his project by making everybody an executive producer on his album.
That could be very interesting.
I know, and it's in a sense you would own a little piece of Head On Radio Network by doing that.
That's possible.
One of the things that I noticed from like other companies when they're starting off is this again, it's this lack of ingenuity, or it's this lack of creativity, and when they come up with a finance problem, they just say, "Well, we're done for," and you just need to keep looking for doors. That's all I can really say about that. And I really think, you know what? Just keep looking for inspirational stories, and they're out there.
They are.
And keep looking out for those angel investors, too.
Well,
you never know who will come to your door. Never.
That's true. Let's add another voice to the choir here, if you guys don't mind.
Number five, here we go.
I don't know. I feel like Scotty on the Enterprise. Oh, Captain, she's gonna break up if we add any more.
Didn't you, Scotty?
Okay.
There's no intelligent life down here.
Exactly. Hey, who's
Bob? Just so you know, I'll try to drum up some investors on my end.
Cool. Thank you, David.
Good, David.
And David, I'll call up some angels, okay?
All right, good.
And who's on line? This is line six I just brought on board. Who have we got? Okay, I don't know. Maybe with the way this works, we have to do Mouseketeer roll call every time I add a line. Eric.
Okay, Eric's here. Reporting for duty, sir.
Yeah, Kate.
Kate.
David.
David.
Yes. Line six.
Where's line five?
Susan.
Susan, there's Susan, okay.
Susan!
Susan, baby!
Okay, so lines four and five appear to be open.
I thought you went out to pick strawberries and stayed away, Susan.
Hey, I miss out on this. Anybody with a mouth like mine, you've got to be kidding.
I think the important thing,
thing to mention.
What we have here
about
is
the quarter.
Oh, wait, okay. Eric.
Four.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't hear.
Okay, start again. Go, Eric.
I think the situation we have is, I can remember MoveOn.org, and I can remember having conversations privately and publicly with Guy. And basically, you go to MoveOn.org, or you go to George Soros, and so on and so forth. These guys are not willing to support any kind of radio, whether it's on the internet streaming or whether it's on the public airwaves, like you people are doing, you, Guy, Bob, right? They're not there to give the money. They got the money. How come we can't get the money from those guys? I know why Guy thinks that. But I mean, there seems like to be a hell of a lot of pretentious goodwill on the side of all these billionaires that want to do something that's right in society. In the old days of the Carnegies and Rockefellers that made their money from really bastardized in the middle class, lower classes of America in the late 1800s and early 1900s, becoming filthy rich and then coming philanthropists and so on and so forth. But where are the George Soros really in real life in these times?
Soros bought into Halliburton.
I had a very interesting conversation with a person who will remain nameless yesterday, and we were talking about this very issue. And there's some historical stuff to this. If we're going to talk about radio and liberals and why it's hard to get money for the same, because let's keep something in mind here. The Horn is not the only thing that's struggling to stay alive, okay? Nova M is struggling to stay alive, and so is Air America, okay? And frankly, if you get right down to it, at this point in time, I would be willing to bet that Jones Radio Network is probably losing money on Ed Schultz.
Probably.
Guessing there, but with all
Democracy Now.
Democracy Now is a different model, Eric, because
Pacifica.
Pacifica is a 501c3, and I have no idea how they get away with it, to be quite honest. Because, we sit here night after night talking about how, churches out there tap dance on the 501c3 rules because they politic from the pulpit. Well, if you're a 501c3, you're not supposed to be advocating for or against individual candidates or individual politicians.
Bob, one of the things you should look into is see how Link TV got started.
This is David?
Yeah. Link TV is, it's I don't know if you guys have it or not, but it's widespread everywhere, and they have program after program, and they're almost like a Californian kind of like PBS, but they're on DirecTV, and they started from nothing. And when I watch their donations drives that they do, I'm always knocked out by how they do it every single time. And to me, Link TV is one of those examples of what television in news and progressive media can be. And I don't think they're referenced enough, but...
Yeah,
one of the things they do is it's amazing. They take Check this out. They take all of the Arab news. It's called Mosaic. I don't know if you people have heard of it. They take all of the Arab news, and they get translators, and they put it underneath it. So every single region is translated. It's a half-hour program every single day. It's called Mosaic.
Well, let's address a couple of these. First off, the philosophy of trying to get liberals to put up money, and we're talking by liberals, I mean groups or angels or investors or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
That problem goes back to the origins, I believe, of talk radio itself. All right. The medium itself, talk radio, began with nothing but a steady stream of blistering hate coming out of the right wing. And it put anybody who was liberal or progressive or even just a halfway decent human being who heard that decided they wanted no part of it. So the minute you say talk radio to them, what comes into their skull is Rush Limbaugh or Savage or, you know, any Hannity, O'Reilly, any of these hate mongers, and that puts them off.
I'd like to make a real suggestion on what you just said that would add to this discussion. I think one of the persons that we should be talking to is, because he knows his way around businesses and how to get things off the ground, and in particular like this, would be if you have some conversations with Tom Hartman, because he did start 3 Fortune 500 companies. I don't know if people know that, but he did start 3. So he knows what he's doing.
I'd like to, but Tom's a very busy man. And
I'm sure I understand that, but he does take
wait, please. The other side of that is, I don't know what other people's philosophy is, David, as compared to mine. I don't believe in competition, at least not where liberal talk is concerned, because it's a very, very young format, and it's a format that can't afford to slit the throats of its. But there are people out there that believe differently. You know, Tom is obviously working for a different organization. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll try to make an overture, maybe. I just don't know.
Try to have a private conversation with him, because I guarantee that you would learn a lot about starting a radio business or starting something and ideas on how to get investors interested. He knows. What I'm saying, Bob, is he knows. He's probably the person at the top of the radio who knows right now, like I said.
Okay, but please, David, I'm not contending with you.
Yeah.
But again, Tom is with Air America, and Air America is still struggling. Okay.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is he'll lead you to the door of ideas for investors. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Any other?
Well, the other part of this, beyond the fact that talk radio just puts liberals off, is the fundraising paradigm itself. Now, I'm just going to point toward this, because I'm not gooning on anybody, I'm not criticizing anybody, but, you know, I go to, for instance, BuzzFlash for a lot of my stuff, because it's easy, you know, it's current, and, you know, boom, boom, boom. BuzzFlash and WD40.com and BarkCop are three of the sites that I am at every blessed day, okay?
Right.
Now, BuzzFlash puts up text. That's it.
Okay,
that's it. And they run two or three websites. They will, by the end of this month, have raised $30,000. They put up a $25,000 fundraiser last month. For all I know, they'll put another one up next month. Okay? And the reason they're able to get it is because the breadth of their reach. They are being hit by a lot of people who see it, and a lot of people who therefore donate or participate in what they do. So the more we broaden the reach of the programming of the horn to people out there, liberals and progressives, the more likely it is that I can stop talking about this so much, because it will be somewhat self-sustaining, and it'll be at a level that the more people we get, the less money needs to be given individually. Does that make any sense?
That's where I was gonna go. Is you need to be buttonholing almost everybody you meet, especially if you find out that they're against Bush or they're liberal or progressive or whatever. You want to hear some really good liberal talk. Shell for the radio station. Push it out there. I want supporters to have business cards put up, printed up. I hand them out to everybody. And I walk around with a whole bunch of them and say, here, really neat. Do you have a computer with speakers? great, here's, check this site out. And they take the card and they go off, and a certain percentage of them are going to be checking out the horn.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Every listener should be doing that. If we believe in this, we should be doing that to every person we meet.
Well, I know a lot of you have added a signature line regarding the horn to the bottoms of your emails. And that's a great way to get the information out.
Bob?
Yes.
I don't mean to intrude. I'm trying.
No, you're
to,
not.
I mean,
you're
it's
not.
Complicated a lot of times when you can't see visual cues. I'd like to get back to a point maybe 20 minutes ago. I think America, not just the horn, but America needs to find a solution to the corporative on a more grandiose sort of scale, but more realistic in terms of the effect that it has upon Americans and the world. I think America needs to find out what the truth is rather than be manipulated by the mainstream media. And I think the horn is like a starting place to get to that, not necessarily for self-defined liberal or progressive use, but just to get the truth out so people can make up their own minds in a legitimate democracy, as I believe we have in this country. Still, though it's been bastardized to live in Darwin's over the last 7 years, but I really think it's really important to de-emphasize the liberal and progressive attributes of truth. I don't think the truth does have progressive or liberal attributes to it. I believe that truth is truth, and then let people make their own minds up. I mean, I really think that goes back to Jeffersonian democracy. You know, 220 years ago or so and so forth. And I think that can bastardize the label, the demonization of liberals or the demonization of neoconservatives or whatever it is. Get the truth out. I'm, you know, maybe you can help me along with this. I don't know.
No, I know what you're getting at. And we tend to say liberal or progressive so that progressives will know, because going back to what the point I made a little bit ago, Eric, is that people are put off by the idea of talk radio at all if they're any kind of decent human being. So we identify ourselves as liberal so that hopefully other liberals, other progressives, whatever, will know that they've got a safe place and they're not going to get screamed at by the likes of aborts. Does that make some sense?
Oh, it makes a lot of sense, but I'm looking for the progressive, not necessarily idealistic progressive, but the progressive manner in which the media, starting with radio talk shows, would progress, right? As it would present the news with referenceable sources and so on and so forth. Please remember, I have some dental work done here, so I'm still not talking very well.
Don't worry about it.
But, I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make, that, I mean, truth is truth. It's got references. I mean, and you can look at things in a different perspective on a metaphysical basis and so on and so forth, and we're not going to get into heavy philosophy right here. But the fact of the matter is that it really polarizes still the them guys against us guys. I mean, it's almost like going still back into high school and saying, in Vermont here, we have two teams, and they're called the X team and the Y team. And every year, it's the X, Y team going back to bat. And that's what it is. It becomes more of the X and the Y team as compared to the sport and the beauty of a football game. To watch it in its development for the healthiness of it, right? And the democracy should be the healthiness of the democracy, not that team versus this team. And I think, I don't know, that's just my perspective.
But isn't there an... okay.
I think it gets too polarized sometimes if you use too many terms.
I would tend to agree, and I wish it was otherwise. However...
this is David?
No, this is me. This is Bob. The polarization is something for which we're not responsible. It's what we got handed, and it's the hand we've got to play until something changes in America to where people realize that, you know, this isn't about, I mean, and there's an aspect of us versus them in any of this, because quite frankly, the war that's being waged is the top 0.1% plus the fundamentalists against the rest of us. All right, we're going to do Mouseketeer roll call again because I'm bringing on line 4.
Eric here.
Kate.
Well, wait a second.
Susan.
Hold on. Don't get ahead of yourself.
I can't count that fast.
Okay. Okay, if you're on, whoever you are on hold, try back again. I just dropped you because for some reason or other it won't let me bring you on, but I'm supposed to be able to bring on 6 lines at a time. At any rate, now I understand. I understand the frustration with polarity, but it's the reality of what we have now. And so, you know, to a certain extent, we're cursed with it, aren't we? I mean, Kate, Susan, David, chime in.
Personally, I believe the liberal tagline has flatlined. I see it all around me, Bob. You're going to have to run with progressive.
Speak up.
Bottom
David.
Line.
David, speak up. David?
What's that?
Kate, David said the liberal label has flatlined.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought.
We need to change that to progressive. That's what he said.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
That's really offensive. That means you're giving in to the Bushies.
No, that's not
what
it means.
Giving in to them.
No. That's not what it means. I'm going to tell you what it means. What it means is definitions change over time, just like the
uh-huh.
N-word, just like anything. Definitions change over time, and you have to adapt or die. It's that simple, Susan.
Tell that to that Rutgers basketball player.
What?
Tell that to that Rutgers basketball player.
What are you talking
who
about?
Who just filed suit against Imus for calling her a nappy-headed hoe. Terms don't change that much.
That has nothing to
do
with what I'm discussing. I'm telling you...
Yeah, it does, in a sense.
No. In terms of the N-word... Okay, listen. In terms of the N-word, people use it as defiance and empowerment. That's what they do. There's a difference between... It's like what Tupac says. There's a difference between the A and the R. The R are the ones hanging from those trees. The A's are the ones with the ropes on their neck, as in gold. That's the way it is.
Okay, I get that. I don't know if liberal is dead or not, David. I'll use whatever...
To me, it's not.
I'll use whatever word, the John Kennedy quote about am I a liberal? Brilliant. Just brilliant.
Damn straight I am.
I tell you what, I've got a problem here. I'm gonna put a couple of people back to hold and try to bring this new person on. And when I do, then I'll bring the other people
who's
back from hold, okay?
Vote?
Pardon?
Who's the new person? We'll vote whether we want him or her on.
I have no idea. I don't have a producer.
Oh,
you're doing a great job, Bob.
Bob,
you're doing a great job.
Thank you, Eric, but I'm cranky, okay?
Bob, let's see if that works.
Pardon?
Put me on hold. Let's see if that works.
I don't even know which number you're on anymore, Kate. Okay.
2. Eric came in first. I should be on line 2.
Okay, stand by.
Okay.
All right, let's try this. Hi, who have I got?
Bob.
Bob?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
How you doing?
Oh, we're doing great.
Hello?
Let's. Yeah.
Hello. Who's this? Is this Sue?
This is Susan from Columbia City.
Hello, darling. Hello.
Okay. I've just learned something from a technological standpoint. I've got a call to make to the fine folks at Comrex come Monday. I should be able to bring all 6 lines on, but I'm only able to bring on 4.
Oh, no.
Dang.
Well, hey, now
Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm going to drop because I'm on my neighbor's phone, so I'm going to get out of here. So now you only have to work with 5 buttons, okay?
Which one is this?
Okay, Kate.
I'm so accommodating. Hey, y'all have a good day. It's been good to talk to you. Please send some money in this weekend. Okay?
Hey, I already
thank you, Kate.
Bye.
I do.
Hold on. Okay. Okay, there goes Kate, and I don't know what line she was on now.
I don't.
She said she was on 2.
She's not on 2.
Darn.
Okay, she was on 1. And that must mean that...
Stone Eric from Vermont is on 1.
No, no.
Eric.
Okay, so, well, anyway, I've got you all now.
Ah, you can hear me.
Oh. Yeah, I've got David, I've got Eric, Susan, and Bob.
I can barely hear Gunny.
Well, that's because Bob's phone volume is very low. There's not much I can do about it here.
Well, I'm trying. Should I speak louder, or should I just scream into the...
That's fine, right there. Scream.
Oh, scream. Okay.
Be passionate.
I got a lot of passion. I got passion for you folks. Oh, God, I got a lot of passion for you. I love you all dearly. I care about you desperately, and I want all I ever ask of any of you is just stand up and don't be uncounted. If you're going to go down like the 6 million did under the Nazis in Germany, then, hey, at least have a, you know, at least have a tattoo on your being that you can, you know, produce to the photographers and the cryptographers and all these lying SOBs. And I'm not going to say the word, Bob.
Okay.
I just want you all to stand up and just be counted. If it's a number that they tattoo into your hide, or if it's one that they chip they put into you so they can track you with an RFID, or if it's something else that they try to make you take so that they want you to swallow their stupid pill, this pill of, yeah, we're not fascists, we're just trying to protect you from whom? Who are they trying to protect them? Protect us from ourselves? Huh? Question. That was the big question mark. I was just on the internet playing with some boys and girls there, and I had the same question. Whom are they trying to protect you from?
Well, okay, you put the question on the table. Sing out. Anybody?
Yeah.
Trying to protect themselves from us.
No. Well, yeah, of course that, Susan. Hey, I knew that. You throw that one out there in a heartbeat. But guess what? The only thing, hey, FDR said it the best, okay? The only thing you got to fear is fear itself. And they keep shoving it down our throat. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid. Don't be afraid unless they're at your door. And then don't be afraid of them because then you got them in your grasp. They're at your door. They're knocking your door down. So hit them with your rakes and your hose and your, and you know, and if you got a little...
But the problem is, Bob, nobody's at our doors, okay?
Yeah.
We talk about that in figurative terms, but they're not. And until such time as we can go after them with the rakes and the torches and the pitchforks, the question is, how do you fight them back without... Without being able to see the whites of their eyes? How do you do that?
I'll tell you how you do it. Okay, I don't know how many hits you get on your system every day. I mean, on your internet system, how many people log in to listen to Bob Kincaid? I don't know how many do. Okay, but you know, if everybody that logged in to listen to the Kincaid program And to head on radio network would just, you know, kind of pony up, okay, pony up a buck a week, okay, you know, if you, I don't know, a buck a week, a buck a day, depends on how much you can afford, but if you got a buck, just $1 a day, okay, or $1 a week, or $1 a month, whatever you can send to the head-on network, you can do it. It's easy. Just go online. Or put it in an envelope, and Agnes will give you the address, and you send them an envelope with a dollar in it whenever you can spare a buck. I mean, just a buck, okay? And if there's 100,000 of you out there, or maybe just 10,000, or maybe 1,000, oh, maybe just 100,000. Or like, what was that Mike Malloy said the other night? There's 8 or 10 people are listening, and maybe 5 or 6 of them are Republicans. Well, hey, what the hell? Even if you're a Republican, you'd like to hear Bob Kincaid spew a little bit of his nonsense? All right, so send him a buck so you can keep listening to it. But just send him a buck if you can do it in the mail, if you can do it online, through PayPal, if you can do it any way you can. Just put a buck or 10 $10 or $20 or whatever you got that you don't have to spend on cigarettes and booze and wild women like Susan up there in Oregon.
Yep. Well, yeah, okay.
I got her laughing.
You got a laugh out of her. All right, that's a fair enough point, Bob. And we don't have yet the mailing address or the subscription button up on the website at headonradionetwork.com. Our good friend John Fox, who does a show and maintains the web the website and does several other things all at the same time, has been kind of up against the wall with everything. That will go up eventually. But there is a mailing address for those people who don't want to deal with PayPal, and that is Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, that stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. One more time, just to make sure that everybody gets it, because everybody has to run and get the pencil, then it's already gone, then you got it, so you got to do it twice. Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. And gang, it's news time, so I will close stuff out.
Can I say something real fast?
Well,
about the PayPal.
Yeah, go ahead.
It'll show up on your credit card bill as Head.
It just shows up as Head?
That's what it says.
Yeah. Hey, Bob.
Beautiful.
Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
For a moment. Just for one moment. Can I say to my lovely lady out there in Oregon, love you, girl. Keep fighting.
Love you too, Benny.
I love you a bunch. And, Bob, you're right on. And you're head on. And keep taking them that way, because they ain't taking you down as long as we support the Head On Radio Network. And peeps out there, all of you peeps out there, just get behind this guy, because he's pushing and he's fighting, and I'm fighting for all of you. Love you. And, hey, Sue, you are a wild Washington woman. I'd like to
All right, everybody, it's been fun. Let's clear the lines and see if anybody else wants to get onto the front porch, okay?
Good job, Bob.
Yep.
Eric, thank you so much. Thank you,
no,
Bob.
Thank you.
David, thank
nice
you.
Nice talking to all of you.
Later.
Later, David. Thanks for the suggestions. And, Susan, take care. Well, everybody hung up at once, and I got to clear all the... Hey, that's what that clear all button's for. Okay, so there's... I can't do six. We'll find out Monday, and then I'll be able to do six. But I can do four. If you haven't taken part in the Friday night front porch conversation, consider that we're sitting here with a ceramic jug with some good old fashioned up the holler white lightning and a corn cob stopper. Got rocking chairs, banjos. One of these days, or the other, you know, I lean on John Fox like somebody leans on a rock after a hard climb. One of these days, we'll get him on for one of these things, and he can sit there and play slide guitar, and it'll be perfect. It'll be just perfect. In the meantime, however, we're going to go to the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening. Hey, where else does this happen? Where else does this happen? It only happens on America's Liberal Voice. It only happens on the Horn. You know the number. 304-658-5453 or toll free 877-443-2366. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You can crush us, you can
This is the Quality News Network. On Wall Street today, the markets responded to the Fed's lowering of a key interest rate. The Dow soared more than 300 points just after opening. We'll have the closing numbers coming up in our business segment. Two powerful aftershocks rattled survivors of Wednesday's magnitude 8 quake in Peru. One tremor measured 5.9. The death toll is at least 510, but officials say that number will go higher. Rescue efforts continue while water, electricity, and communication systems are still down. Last night's collapse at the Huntington, Utah mine that killed three workers has halted the underground rescue effort indefinitely. The three victims were digging to try and reach a group of six of their colleagues trapped by a collapse 11 days ago. Crews are still attempting to drill yet another surveillance hole to try and locate those men. CNN reports 4,000 coalition forces have died in the Iraq war. The number of U.S. military casualties is 3,705 since the war began in March 2003. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki traveled to Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit to encourage Sunni tribal leaders to rejoin his new government. A Shiite, al-Maliki has forged an alliance with Iraqi Kurdish leaders. Sunni leaders recently pulled out of the alliance government. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced he's ordered the resumption of long-range strategic bomber flights. The flights were common practice during the Cold War era. In Richmond, Virginia, two co-defendants in the Michael Vick dogfighting case pleaded guilty this morning. The two testified the Atlanta Falcons quarterback personally took part in killing at least eight dogs. If Vick fails to accept a plea agreement, Monday he'll face a grand jury bringing even more serious charges against him. Vick's lawyers have been negotiating with prosecutors. Republican Representative Dennis Hastert announced today that he will not run for another term in Congress. The Illinois congressman has been Speaker of the House longer than any other Republican. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says he will leave his job sometime before the Bush presidency ends for financial reasons. Snow makes $168,000 a year, but he took a pay cut when he left his radio show. At least 41 deaths in the southern and midwestern U.S. are being blamed on a week-old heat wave. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
In Texas, Tropical Storm Erin left widespread flooding in her wake. Local media is blaming the storm for at least seven deaths. Hurricane Dean has been upgraded to a Category 3 storm, and it could strengthen to a Category 5 hurricane by Monday. That's according to forecasters. It has hit the Caribbean islands, where one person's been killed, and is heading toward the Gulf of Mexico. Dean could bring 150-mile-an-hour winds. NASA is considering bringing the space shuttle home a day early to avoid any bad effects of Hurricane Dean. Officials have also decided not to repair a gouge in the space shuttle Endeavour's tiles, saying the risk of a spacewalk would be greater than that of returning the ship as is. The Federal Reserve cut the discount rate on loans to banks today by half a percentage point to 5.75%. The move is meant to stabilize financial markets. Experts say it did just that and even sent stocks worldwide on a strong upswing. Gold is currently trading at $666.80 an ounce. That's up $8.80 an ounce. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $71.98 a barrel, up 98 cents. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 233 points to close at 13,079. The Nasdaq closed up 54 points, and the S&P was up 35 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. I should probably update the total for you. I was a little slow on the trigger for the intro, being how I'm my own producer tonight. We're cutting your pay, Agnes. If only she heard me say that. I'd never say it twice. Yeah, that's the truth. We are at... Roughly, almost, $800 now for the month. We're getting there. And it's all because you're the ones making it happen. And I appreciate it. And just as quickly as we get to a point where we don't have to do this anymore, I will be the first one to tell you. Heck, I'll be jumping for joy when, you know. On the other hand, however, whether you're doing it monetarily or if you're just telling people about it, that's the other way we grow. You know, maybe someday you'll have to listen to some commercials. Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to let that change the fundamental philosophy of what's going on here. And there will not be commercials running on this network that are not personally approved by yours truly. I realize that ideological purity can be a pain in the butt sometimes, but, you know, I can't see taking advertising money from someone whose product I despise. An interesting case in point, by the way, for those of you who are followers or fans of or have worked in radio, you probably know what the term payola means. Payola is it was that practice of record company executives in the days gone by of quietly giving money or products or whatever to program directors and disc jockeys back when music on the radio had real push. A song might just suck for air, but a rep from the record company would come along and give a jock, you know, $50, $15, whatever. You know, we're talking about the 50s, the 60s, probably even before that. And the next thing you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, the next thing you know, that jock's on the air playing that really crappy record and saying, "Man, that's the next big hit. Wow, with a bullet to the top." And that was payola, and the FCC intervened and declared that process to be illegal. Because it is kind of a fraud, isn't it? If a song is good, it should stand or fall on its own merits. Not on whether or not some jock was paid to say that it was good. Well, welcome to deregulated 21st century America. This is a fascinating little story, and it comes from the pen of, it is what it is. And, you know, I've talked about Ralph Nader's things that he's done politically, and I don't agree with them to this day, and I'm not going to get into that discussion. However, long before he was ever doing politics, Ralph was doing what Ralph is good at, and that is citizen advocacy with regard to products, be they dangerous, defective, or fraudulent. And guess what? He's found another one. This was sent to me. Come on. Okay, who sent this to me? Oh, this came from our good friend Carolyn Kay over at MakeThemAccountable.com. Carolyn does some wonderful work. You'll hear her many Friday mornings chatting with our good friend Joe Vecchio on his program that airs at 11 a.m. Monday through Friday. Ralph has uncovered a new level of fraud, and it's radio. Now, we all know that the American auto industry is in bad trouble. And so they need all the good PR that they can get. And Ralph Nader noticed a story in Automotive News, that's a trade journal for the auto industry. General Motors is, according to this article, wooing the radio stars. The headline, Puff Piece. Rush Limbaugh is one of the radio personalities GM is working with to talk up its vehicles. Because, you see, advertising is advertising, and everybody understands what advertising is. And consequently, ad pros work harder and harder and harder to make advertising not seem like advertising. Because if it's just a news story in the newspaper, you're supposed to look at it and say, oh, wow, that's not advertising, that's news. Although I would hope that most of us participating on this network have enough perspicacity to look at it and say, what a gullible. Ralph Nader writes that reporter Mary Connolly says, quote, GM says it doesn't pay the stars directly for their endorsements, although it advertises on their shows. So GM will buy advertising inside the Rush Limbaugh program or the Hannity program and several others, some of which may come as a shock to you. And then, after it's bought the advertising, it also gives them new GM cars and trucks to drive for 2 weeks every month. The company then also invites the celebrities to Detroit for private meetings with top executives and VIP tours of GM facilities. And Mary Connolly writes, according to Ralph Nader, GM says the attention is paying off. I'm kind of at cross purposes on this article, because while I've never been a GM guy, I was raised on Chryslers, you know, what does that tell you? I've never been a GM guy because I always thought GMs were just kind of shoddy. The plastic were, and the same, and a little less so with Ford, but yeah. Look, let's not start the redneck NASCAR Ford versus GM debate, okay? I'm not up for it tonight. But anyway, what they're doing, as noted, they're buying ads on these programs. And they're not giving scripts to the hosts. They're just giving them a car 2 weeks a month. New car 2 weeks every month. And they've made contact, GM has, with 17 national radio hosts, as well as a slew of local talkers in places like Dallas and L.A. Let's see, what are they saying? What they're tickled about, this one particular individual, Sam Mancuso, who is GM's Director of Brand Marketing Alliances, it says he's tickled to death because he's getting impromptu creativity that he said reflects, quote, a real emotional connection with an audience that, quote, knows they are being genuine. Knows they're being genuine? I'm not so sure. Here's a quote from the Flimball, the oxymoron. I'm surprised he still has a driver's license. I bet he doesn't. GM has a ton of momentum. GM cars and trucks have never been better. And the ditto heads go, well, I'll be damned. But he didn't stop there. He goes on, GM is working hard and they're thinking smart. Believe in General Motors, folks. Jesus criminy. Then they gave a Cadillac to a guy who calls himself Adam Smasher in, Dallas? Yeah. He said, I'm driving around in this Cadillac, and I'm not going to want to give it back. The Cadillac SRX to all the guys at GM. Good job. Then there's Chris Ryan across town in Dallas. He says, have you seen all the cool things that's going on at GM? I have. If you're thinking about a new car, you got to look at GM. How about that? Now, Sean Hannity was enlisted in this program. Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, Bill O'Reilly. Got a couple other names for you. And the question I have for you, and we can get back on the front porch with this. Bill Press and Ed Schultz were also recruited into the program. What do you think about that? And they won't answer questions. Nader writes, so what about the talk radio arena? Good question. If the freebies are fully and regularly disclosed, then maybe there's a distinction between what's unlawful and what's unethical. The FCC, he says, needs to investigate. What do you think of that? Now, on the other hand, what would happen... if I could get hold of the right people... I'd talk to Ford tomorrow. I'd say, I want one of your hybrid SUVs that I can haul the family around in. And we'll trade out a lease on that for advertising. It'll be a straight dollar-for-dollar trade. We'll advertise, and maybe I'll even do some live stuff about it, but I'll tell my audience why I'm doing it. See, Flush Flimball isn't telling the Ditto Monkeys that he's getting a car for free every 2 weeks in exchange for babbling good about them. Because, you see, that's the nature of the beast in this sordid little arrangement. If that thing blew up through a rod and was sitting on the side of the road, Flush Flimball wouldn't tell you that. He'd go on the air and say, I'm telling you. GM's really going somewhere. I just noticed a technical difficulty. This is no good. But seriously. Is this unethical? Of course it's unethical. And guess what? It's unethical for Ed Schultz, too. And it's unethical for Bill Press, too. And before anybody says, it's just Bob with sour grapes, it's unethical for Bob Kincaid and Joe Vecchio and John Fox and Mark Levine and Guy James and Peter Godbold and Dr. Bill. It's unethical for all of us because it's a fraud. It's a con. On the other hand, somebody wants to advertise hybrids with me, I'll promise them a certain amount of on-air live mentions if I approve of the product, if I think it's worth it. Because if it's worth it and it saves some gasoline, I'll recommend it on to you. Hell, Toyota, with its hybrid synergy drive, advertises with the American Public Media. They sponsor specifically a Prairie Home Companion. And God knows that probably costs them a few million dollars a year. For $100,000, I'd advertise that hybrid synergy drive for 2 years. And all they'd have to do would be to sell four cars to four listeners. And they'd have made their money back, money that they wrote off on the corporate taxes anyway as cost of doing business. But I just thought you'd like to know that the fraud continues. Every time you hear an ad on Flush Flimball or any right-wing talker, and now apparently on Bill Press and Ed Schultz, you have to wonder if the host has been paid off in order to get him to say whatever it is he's saying. Let's go to the phones. Hey, who have I got?
Hi, Bob. It's Luke.
Hey, Luke. How's it going?
Oh, fine. I just had one story tonight to call in to you about.
All right.
And it,
Did you see the story last night on Mr. Oberman about the story about Wikipedia?
You mean about what?
People
going getting...
and rearranging history.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you find it interesting that the same people who, when Dan Rather accepted a note, a letter that he thought was real and pushed it out, they said you have to fire him because he falsified something, are the same people now who are going into their opponents? I mean, you know, apparently they went into Keith Olbermann's bio, they went into Al Franken's bio, and decided to rewrite history a little bit. And on the thing of Mr. Franken, now, Mr. Franken, as I understand it, is a declared candidate for the U.S. Senate. My question is, where is the FEC and the FCC? Because you have a news organization that is slandering a candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because apparently this wiki search thing links it right back to a computer at Fox. It's noise. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, it just amazed me the outrage you heard when it was Dan Rather. But amazingly enough, I looked today through most of the major papers through the BuzzFlash links. You know, went down through the AJ, Atlanta Constitution, the Baltimore Sun, the Boston Globe. And I found, like, the one story from the guy from AP, and he doesn't even go into a whole lot of detail. And, like, I think there's one little thing from some guy from Wired magazine. But other than that, amazingly enough, it's not at any news site I could find, really. You know, a mainstream news site, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I meant to tell you this, too. I saw last weekend they had Mikey Weinstein was on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
Doing things. He had a new name for him, and I like it, about the media, the lamestream media.
Yeah?
Yeah, L-A-M-E, lamestream.
Exactly.
But you know what I mean? Isn't it amazing that these are the same people that screamed and hollered and, you know, and just absolutely threw fits?
Right, because...
And now we find these are the people that are out there rearranging the news, rearranging facts so that it fits their stories.
Because sauce for the goose is not sauce for the gander.
Yeah, and I mean, I've written, like say, to the Situation Room, and I've written, of course, to Mr. Kurtz at Reliable Sources, and I know I won't see anything Sunday, but I'll look just in case, and I know there won't be any mention of it on the weekend shows. But isn't it amazing though, how like say all these people are the same people that you know, like say that threw fits when it's other people doing it. You know, this is the same Washington Post that Mr. Kurtz writes for that, you know, they absolutely just threw a fit when it was some fellow named Glass they caught lying.
Mm-hmm.
But amazingly enough, they have some woman named Cece Conley who was caught altering stories in the 2000 election cycle, something called the Love Canal story.
Yep.
And she's still there, and there's a lady, I think, named Catherine Seeley at the New York Times that, believe it or not, she's still there, too. But, you know, understand, it's somebody in our paper. No.
Right. Well, because, you know, there are different rules. There really are. There are different rules for Republicans and Democrats. There are different rules for liberals and conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the rules are much easier for the conservatives.
But you know what I mean? It's one of these things when you're sitting here watching some of this stuff and you go, you know, like, guys, if this had been 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when it was some fellow named Clinton in the White House, we'd have been heard screaming and hollering and yelling.
The 24-hour news cycle would have shifted over to nothing but, Luke.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Here you are sitting, and also talking about the news. Isn't it amazing, and I've seen a couple stories like on Huffington Post and such. Isn't it amazing how we've had all this stuff about the mine disaster, rightfully so, but you know, we still don't hear anything about this fellow that's in a whole lot about this fellow in charge of the mine safety department.
Oh, Richard, you know, Stickler, the recess appointment?
Yeah.
The guy who's
he's somebody who just doesn't like those regulations. He thinks they're bad.
Well, yeah. Wasn't this the same guy that got just blistered by a Senate panel when he said, "I got to go now, I'm leaving, goodbye." And this was the SAGO hearings.
Yeah,
same guy, right?
Uh huh.
And a Republican Senate wouldn't confirm him.
No. Yeah, remember, this is like '96, right before the election. I think it was 95 or 96, '06.
Yeah, '06.
And they could not get this guy passed through a Republican-dominated Senate.
No.
Because even they were going, wait a minute, this is so dirty even we can't do it because our hands are getting very dirty off of this.
Yeah, I'm being our good friend Nanette in the chat room, Luke, is saying, that stickler. It's the same guy. This guy got up. I mean, this is how brazen he is. He got up and walked out on a Senate
hearing.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, isn't it amazing how you've seen absolutely almost no reporting on the, of course, again, on the lamestream media, of this guy who's the guy, like I say, who's pretty much rewritten the rules for all the mine companies.
Precisely.
Oh, I tell you what.
And he's got blood all over his hands.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, it's like, we track it back, and they go, oh, we took those regulations off because those were hurting people.
And now
it's like that story I have I've sent before about Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson, one of his little things that hopefully somebody will bring back up when he's being questioned one time is, Fred Thompson was the chief lobbyist for the savings and loans in the late 70s, early 80s.
You're darn right he was.
And he got these regulations taken off savings and loans because they were hurting business.
Well, three
years later, we had probably thousands, maybe tens of thousands of families that lost their life savings.
And while we're talking about media issues, and that certainly didn't get a lot of play, but while we're talking about media issues, let's remember, or let's at least take note now that the media are portraying this business in Utah as the search for the miners has been indefinitely suspended. Yeah, how about a little plain English, Luke? How about the search for the miners have been given up for dead?
This is a it's shifted, I believe, into a recovery mode, and they just don't want to say it.
They've been given up for dead. It's okay to use the language.
Well, and the thing of it is, they haven't really explained a whole lot. I saw maybe one or two stories where they explained how this mining system they work. Essentially, they go through, and as they mine, they pull the supports down behind them.
And they
wonder why it collapsed.
There's nothing new about it, and there's nothing out of the ordinary about it. And it was described as pure profit, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
It was described. It's called retreat mining, and it's done all the time, and it's deadly. You are deliberately pulling the roof down on your head and laying odds
betting it won't fall.
That you'll be able to run before it falls. No, you're not betting it won't fall because it's going to fall.
It won't fall while you're there.
Yeah, you're betting that you can get out before it goes.
Yeah.
And this evil horse's ass, what's his name, Murray?
Murray? I tell you what, one thing.
Yeah, it was an earthquake. Horse feathers, it was an earthquake.
One thing could be is, isn't there somebody at that company that would say, Mr. Murray, quit talking. Every time you talk, you scare the hell out of people.
He doesn't
care,
Luke.
Every time I listen to him, I'm like, God, somebody throw a bag over his head. Don't let the man speak.
He's been talking this way since 1990. It's just suddenly somebody's paying attention.
Yeah.
He has been pure poison in Ohio, in West Virginia, in Utah.
They had one of his places, they were talking about one of his other mines, that had been like fined like 250 times or something. I mean, just off the scale.
This mine has 325 safety violations on it.
And like over two-thirds of them were considered major violations.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Luke, you want to join the front porch? Let's bring a couple of folks on, see what's going on.
I'm going to have to go on today and night. I'm sorry. I try not to call in often two nights in a row, but this Wikipedia story just got
it. Oh, I know. It eats you alive, doesn't it?
Like I say, it's one of those things. I'm going to I'll set up Sunday morning, set the VCRs and all that good stuff and try to catch all the shows, and I just want to see if anybody even bothers to mention it.
I got money that says they don't.
Well, like I say, the only place you see it, if you want to see it, you can go to MSNBC, at the Oberman accountant, and he's got the tape of him talking to the fellow from Wired. It's a great little discussion, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
If you want to watch it, because like I say, they essentially go through it, I focus on Fox noise, but like, you had people like Dow Chemical, Exxon. Amazing enough, Exxon decided to rewrite the history of the Exxon Valdez.
What do you want to bet? Maybe they already have.
Yeah, oh, they had. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see with this new search tool if they're going to run like a weekly search to see who's done what. Most people seem to think that, when you push that button, no one knows what you're doing. Everything is logged. It's just how hard you want to look for it. It's like the thing we keep talking about, the White House emails. They're there if somebody really wanted to go find them, because there's got to be a half a dozen different places where they had to make copies, between transmitting, receiving, storing. That if those things are gone, somebody worked their ass off to do it.
Yeah, they did. In fact, our good friend Peter Godbold laid out some of the stuff, and it was just harrowing.
All right, but let me go on and let you get some more people on.
All right, take care, Luke. Bye now.
Bye.
All right. Okay, back to the front porch. We got two people. I hope we got two people on hold here. We'll find out. Hey, who have I got?
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Preston, hold on just a minute. I got. Let's bring the next person on, too.
Okay.
Who's there?
I'm Benedict.
Hey, Benedict. Preston, welcome to the front porch.
Hi. Hey, Benedict.
How you doing, Preston?
I'm doing well.
You came on board first. Get us started.
Well, I was just thinking about the numbers regarding coal deaths each year in this country, but I was thinking how infrequently injuries on that job are reported. I can't imagine what the numbers must be like, but I imagine they're quite high and quite debilitating at times. And on top of that, we don't hear about what's going on internationally very often. Mexico had a coal mining accident. I think it was coal. And they lost about 64 people. And it's quite a job, quite an industry. Again, it's a type of war. You know, it's very much like war on the earth. And I don't know. Hopefully we can transition out of it. I'm very excited about this movie that Tom Hartman has been publicizing, The 11th Hour, and talking about how we can redesign our society, redesign design, and make it much less violent and toxic.
Well, it's a question of what we want, isn't it? If we want it, we can do it.
It's that, but it's also overcoming people who keep, you know, kind of trying to roll back what we desire or putting up obstacles to it. So we can want it, but we can also face oppression from it at times. So,
right.
So overcoming that and dialoguing, organizing.
Well, Preston, just as I said with the Virginia Tech massacre, We have a deal with the devil here, and it turns out that a lot of the things that we do, we have deals with the devil. We have, and the American people have made that deal. You know, it wasn't made for us. We have a deal with the devil that says miners will continue to die in dank, gassy, dirty, unsafe holes because we don't have the willpower to turn the daggum light out when we walk out of a room.
Yeah, are not investing what we should be doing in solar, or using passive solar. So many things like that. But actually, speaking of deals with the devil, I wanted to mention the relationship of some people to General Motors at some point. You know, I think it's funny that phrase, that terminology, you know, General Motors, General Electric, General Foods. I mean, even our words are militaristic. But before I get into that, I actually want to hear what's on Benedict's mind.
Yeah, Benedict, go.
Talk about calling into a topic. I heard this guy, the mining guru or whatever, the first day, say something about retreat mining. And I'd never heard the term before, and I didn't follow it up at the time. But it came up again today, of course, because of, you know, the three miners who died in trying to rescue these guys. And I asked people, what is this? And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I work underground. I mean, I don't work as a miner. I go down, like, 30, 40 feet and lay deep pipe. I mean, but there's no roof above me. But the walls collapse.
Sure.
The walls collapse. And when they collapse, they're deadly. And we're always watching for that, and we're always doing everything we can for that. I can't believe that they're pulling these columns out.
Yeah.
For pennies? For pennies?
No, Benedict, that's where you're wrong. It's not for pennies. It is, as the mining owners said, pure profit.
Pennies. Pennies, as far as I'm concerned. I can't believe.
Well, as compared to a human life, sure, but mine executives don't measure in human lives.
I can't believe that any miner. I mean, I know it's the only job they have, and they're trying to pay for the kids, and I can't believe anyone would submit to that.
I tell you, astonished. Benedict, hold on, because we've got a dear friend of the program from the chat room. Nanette is with us. She is a coal miner's wife and might have something to offer to add to this. Nanette, are you there?
Yeah, sure, I am here.
Did you hear what Benedict was saying?
Yes, I have heard what he said, and retreat mining is what in our local area they call it pillaring. And as they mine out a section, as they start pulling back, they start pulling the pillars out. It's pure profit. And it's the most dangerous work there is. I know Paul worked those sections for years. And every day when he went to work, I was a nervous wreck until he come home. Because he said, have you ever heard a piece of material rip? That ripping noise?
Yeah, like when
many a day that he would come home and he would hear that noise and he would see the top of that mine start cracking open right over top of his head. And they would start running. And when that top would fall, the concussion from that would knock them off their feet. That's what these guys underground go through all the time. That's what they're subjected to all the time. And Preston, you were talking about the mining injuries. They are horrific.
Okay.
They are horrific. I have lived through more telephone calls than I want to count from the mine saying they're taking my husband to the hospital.
Jeez.
In 1996, he was hurt with a head and neck injury. He's not been able to work a day since.
And getting any support?
Hell on earth. What?
Is he getting any support?
He has never gotten his workers' compensation, but thank God he was a union miner.
Yeah.
And he's got his union pension, and we're living on his disability check.
That's good to hear.
But he has got black lung. He'll never get a dime in the black lung benefits because, well, you just can't get black lung anymore.
No.
And I guess they deny the harm of it like they denied the harm of cigarette smoking and continue to do so to this day. And wherever people try to regulate these people or reform them, it's amazing. Then they just move operations to another country, like where there are fewer rules or there aren't unions to contend with.
Well, we don't have to worry about going to another country now because the Bush administration has gutted MSHA.
Okay.
The guy that's Strickler that's over MSHA now was turned down twice in congressional hearings. I sit there and I watch that because it's near and dear to my heart because I live in coal country.
Uh-huh.
Strickler was over the Bethlehem mines here in Boone County. He's an industry man. He's after profits for the company. He doesn't care about the safety of the men as far as I'm concerned. I thought, dear God, please don't put him in that position. Well, the Congress wouldn't do it, but boy, Bush put him in a recess appointment real quick. Now, look what we got. Great job, Brownie. Great job, Strickler.
Your audience might find it interesting that Brownie, Michael Brown, he actually, on the weekends here in Denver, he hosts a talk radio show on 850 KOA.
Oh, wow.
And I must say, he's a reasonable guy. I disagree with him on just about everything, but...
I hope he's a better talk show host than he was a FEMA manager.
He is doing a pretty good job, actually, in this case. But I don't know. And Bob, actually, I want to confirm something with you. You mentioned a couple weeks ago a number. I think you said in China they lose 10,000 miners each year.
That was the last number that came out of that government. Yeah, something on the order of 10,000 miners per year.
Amazing, you know, and to feed these coal plants, which are creating a whole other set of problems.
You can literally see the coal smoke clouds from satellite traveling west to east across the Pacific.
Yep, dirty bomb. We are dirty bombing ourselves.
We are. And you know, Nanette, something that you mentioned that goes by the boards a lot of the time is that when you're dealing with somebody who's done especially underground coal mining, you know, let's say they have a full and long career and they retire without any mine disasters, but it's almost impossible for an underground coal miner to come through a career without having been in a slate fall or a roof fall, or you know a foot crushed or an arm mangled, you know, something like that. But assuming that that happens, what you get afterward is a fellow's 55, 60 years old, and all of a sudden he's moving around like a 90-year-old because even if he is deemed healthy, he has been physically destroyed by the process.
They're physically broken. Bob, I don't know whether you noticed it or not. Did you ever see a lot of the old coal miners that walk bent over with their hands behind their back?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's common as dirt. They can't straighten up.
No.
I was working 30-inch seams of coal before. 30 inches tall. They crawled on their belly. They didn't get up and walk. You didn't see they've been showing on TV where the ref walking around.
Mm-hmm.
No. The most common mines, they're working in 30, 36-inch coal. That's as high as it is. It's extremely low coal.
And it destroys the lumbar spine.
It sure does. It sure does.
And then when you go, and you mentioned black lung, Nanette, when you go for your black lung, before there's ever a hearing, you'll be sent to a company doctor.
Right.
At least this is how it works in West Virginia. You're sent to a company doctor who never in his entire career ever has found black lung in anybody. And he will issue a report saying this man has evidence that although he told me he does not smoke, he has evidence in his lungs that he smokes 4 packs a day. I'm not kidding. I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. You want to know the funny thing?
What's that?
My husband is a smoker, but he went to get his black lung. They said, "Oh, you don't have black lung because you never smoked." that's the kind of care that we have here. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They're moving to open up a lot more uranium mines these days, oftentimes on Native American land.
Because we've got to ship it to India now.
We're sending it all over the place because the nuclear power energy is making a big move. It's interesting to read their trade journals at times. They're kind of spooky.
I can imagine. Benedict, you were going to say something?
Yeah, please.
Benedict?
I can't compete with the minor story, but when I led the deep pipe and everything, I was afraid every day. And I wasn't being paid all that well. I was afraid every day. We didn't have tops coming down on us, but we had walls. And we'd have spotters up on the top. I mean, a guy who was, I don't know, he was getting paid $10 an hour, which was more than I was. And he'd be sitting up at the top. And he'd be saying, "Hey, I'm afraid of this wall or that wall." And if something happened, I mean, the cave-ins came in so fast and everything. He'd just scream, "Wall!" I mean, that's all he screamed. That's all he had time to scream to us. And us down on the ditch, we would dive to the side that he had said was the good side, or we'd dive into the pipe. I mean, I was never buried in a pipe, but I mean, I had friends who dove into the pipe we were laying to get away from the cave-ins, and we'd spend 20 to 30 minutes caving them out. I mean, and there was nothing above my head, and it was scary as crap. It was scary as crap. I mean, I could hate the guy next to me, but I loved him because he was the difference between me living and dying. And I was his difference, too. And we both know that. We didn't have to like each other. We just worked that way. I'm just so astonished by this whole thing, even worse than what I was doing. I'm astonished.
Yeah.
We had a person laying pipe here in Denver, killed on the job about 2 weeks ago. And the whole crew, at least there was some coverage of it, and almost the whole crew appeared to be Latino. And I would not be surprised if this person was an undocumented worker. And yeah, and I just want to note that, you know, here in Denver, we have one host in particular who's been just relentlessly bashing undocumented people.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about, you know, if there's ever a crime committed somewhere by one in the nation, he's on top of it.
I work with so many undocumented workers, and okay. and I'll be honest, I know that my paycheck goes down because they're competing with me, but I don't blame them. I don't believe that. Why wouldn't you come here? There's nothing there. There's nothing there.
There is that dynamic that's very problematic, and that U.S. workers need to, you know, we need to overcome it. Maybe unemployment insurance, you know, and, you know, job training funding and any number of resolutions to this.
If you organize, I'll tell you what, if you organize the undocumented workers and make them members of unions, you will see a wholesale change in the system.
Yep.
Because these people have been driven here. They haven't come here, okay? They haven't snuck here. And that's what I hate about the right wing. They have been driven here.
Yep. And if you decriminalize them, you know, putting this label on them and saying they don't have rights because of this criminalization that takes place.
That's what drives down my pay.
It disrupts their ability to organize. It disrupts their ability to organize. This guest worker program that was going to give more power to managers. Now, if people are free to act, to assemble, they don't have to worry about being deported or put in a detention center all the time. They're more likely to act. And by so doing, when they are free and when they've got some political power and some standing, they use it in great ways, and they organize themselves. They've been organizing janitors and stuff like that, and they're working to raise wages. So at some point, maybe, you know, the dominant society, people from that can come back into that field. Who knows? But anyway, I felt it was important, though, to note that there are people undocumented who are literally sacrificing their lives in service to this country by doing things like laying pipes.
Aren't there a couple of Hispanic folks, Preston? Aren't there a couple of Hispanic folks that are among those?
Yes,
there is.
Yes.
And Nanette, do you remember, what was it, a year ago when Don Blankenship got caught asking for permission to bring non-English speakers into Massey's mines?
They did it, Bob.
I remember that.
Did they actually do it? I thought they got caught and stopped.
They were living in Whitesville. I saw them with my own eyes. And the guy that killed the man and his little boy or whatever it was up the river here from us,
mm-hmm.
he couldn't speak a word of English. He was dog drunk and he was undocumented.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm going to get off here after I say this, okay?
Okay.
Because, you know, this is a hard topic for me, and Sago tore me all to pieces, and this has too. Because I can't imagine what those families are going through.
No.
But I will say this, and I want everybody that's listening, watching, whatever, that I want you to take this to heart, and I want you to get a hold of your representative. Because this has got to stop. There's no excuse for it. And every safety law written in the books is written in blood. Red blood. There's been bloodshed for every safety law that has been written. And Bush has flushed it all down the toilet, and he's appointed corporatists in there to look for company profits and to heck with our blood.
Yeah.
That's the truth, Nanette. Thank you very, very much.
I'm just going to end it on that. But I think that we all need to get a hold of our representatives. And we need to absolutely scream our heads off. This is ridiculous. And this could... If we could take care of the MWA, or not the MWA, but the coal miners, whether they're union or not, they all go underground and they all allow Americans to flip on their light switch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you, Nanette.
We need to take care of them. And it could spill over into other industries if people will just stand up and say, this is not right, this is dangerous, I'm not doing this. You can't make me do this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because so many of these miners and these non-union mines, they're afraid to go, not to go into a dangerous situation because boss man says, okay, there's another one waiting to take your place. Hit the drift mouth. We don't need you anymore.
That, I don't know how many people understand that or get that, Nanette, because that's the absolute truth. And then if they turn around and fire you for it, yeah, you can get some recompense for it, but it'll take you 5 years, and in the meantime, your house is going to get repoed, you're going to lose your car, you're not going to be able to feed your family, the power will get cut off.
Well, let me tell you another one. Around here, if you lose your job around here, there's not another mine will hire you. Remember the old blackballing they used to call
it? Sure, yeah.
You get blackballed? Well, around here, all the companies is owned by one parent company, Massey Energy. Your name goes out to all the subcontractors and all the other company names. They won't hire you.
No, they won't. And, you know, interestingly, that's as about as illegal as it can be, but they do it.
Well, you tell me what they're doing. It's not illegal, Bob.
Nothing.
They're blowing us up. They're flooding us out. They're killing our underground miners. We've got to get off coal. That's all I can say. We've got to get away from this coal. And this coal to liquids project is just going to absolutely decimate the southern half of this state.
Oh, when they do Coal River Mountain.
Yeah.
My God, yeah. I don't know how you or anybody else is going to be able to live down there.
It's going to be awful.
It is.
That we've got to fight the coal to liquids. They're touting that. We went to a protest Wednesday up at Glade Springs Resort, and you just thought it was a lockdown. It was some kind of a national security area or something, where they had Ray Hall and Rockefeller and all the corporate executives up there trying to figure out a way to shove this coal to liquids down our throat. You know, it's a lot worse, a lot more polluting to convert coal to liquids than it is to use the natural petroleum we're already using.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know what it is? You mine. There's one mining machine in Slaughter's Creek. It takes 80 gallons of fuel an hour to run. That's one machine. There's hundreds of them all over the southern part of this state, not counting the coal trucks hauling the coal. They're mining the coal to feed the machines. They mine the coal to feed the machines. It's like a dog chasing its tail. It's a money-making racket. It's a scheme. And the American people better not fall for it.
Or better stop falling for it. Thanks so much, Nanette.
Okay, I'll let you go on that one.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Could I add a fine point to something Nanette brought up?
Yeah, go ahead. Let me figure out who's on which line.
Okay,
there we go.
And thank you, Nanette, for the segue. Besides burying pipe underground, I also have done about 43 buildings, multifamily units, condos, apartments, about 43 units. Probably the total number of units is well into like the 300s. And my job was to put these buildings through inspection, what they call open wall inspection. It's when all the framework is up and all the piping is in and the inspectors come in and they look at everything. Okay. And very early on in this, I had this old guy. He was, I think it was like 78 years old or something. And he was going to be our fire inspector. And he came in and he said one thing that struck me. And I lived his every word. There is not one word in the fire code that is there because someone has not died because it wasn't done.
That's the story of American occupational safety, Benedict.
But I got it and I did it. And I don't think any of those buildings have burned out or anything. But I mean, you know, I said, wow, yeah, that's true. I mean,
it
just made simple sense.
Guys, we're out of time. I want to try to get one more caller in here. Hey, who've I got?
Would that be me?
That would be you.
Hey, Bob, this is Sue calling.
Hey, Sue.
Hey. Hi, Bob. Hi, Benny. Hi, Preston. Hey, look,
hello.
I want to say this real quick about Bob Murray, the owner of that mine.
Yeah.
I saw him last weekend on MSNBC, and when the reporter for MSNBC, the woman behind the anchor desk, asked him about the violation, 300 and some safety violations, what he did was, I still can't believe I heard this come out of his face. He said, you can be cited for anything, such as not having toilet paper in an underground porta potty. So my attention is with the miners and getting, and it's like, what? But what he did was he left the impression that those fines or citations
are meaningless.
Are for toilet paper.
Right.
Obviously, they're not.
Obviously. Sue, I'm sorry I didn't get to you quick enough. Preston, thank you. Benedict, thank you. Wow, what a night. Thanks, everybody.
Care about your fellow workers.
Bye now. Wow. I think we'll have to continue this. I think this worked out very nicely. Everybody, thank you for joining in for the week. Coming up, Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. It's on the way. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The stock market, spurred on by the Fed's rate cut, regained its strength after a strong opening, followed by some ups and downs today. We'll have the closing numbers in our business block. Rescue operations were suspended indefinitely today after last night's cave-in that killed three rescuers and injured another six in Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine. There's been no sign of the original six miners caught in the cave-in 11 days ago. Hurricane Dean is gathering strength as it courses across the Caribbean. Forecasters say it could reach Category 5, the most intense hurricane measurement, by Monday. Hurricane Katrina was only a 4. The islands of Martinique, Barbados, Grenada, Dominica, and Santa Lucia are being pummeled. Puerto Rico and Haiti are next. In Texas, residents are drying out from the heavy rains and high winds that came ashore yesterday. At least 7 people were killed in that tropical depression. In Peru, the death toll in Wednesday's 8.0 earthquake climbed to 510 and is expected to rise as more bodies are pulled from the rubble. Major aftershocks continue to rattle the region. Food and other supplies are finally getting to the survivors. South Korea has offered a $7 million emergency aid package to its deluged northern neighbor. North Korea has been devastated by flooding. The U.S. Marines prevailed in a fierce battle north of Baghdad today. 13 insurgents died as the U.S. military converged on an al-Qaeda cell. Interpol has issued an arrest warrant for Saddam Hussein's daughter, Raqqad. She and her mother are accused of terrorism and supporting the insurgency in Iraq. An Indonesian court has reduced the sentences of the terrorists involved in Bali's bombings because of good behavior. The convicts had 5 months shaved off of their sentences as a constitutional right. A Marine search and rescue helicopter that was missing in the California-Arizona desert was found just after midnight, 20 miles north of Yuma, near the Colorado River. 3 Marines and 1 Navy sailor were pronounced dead at the scene. 1 survivor, a Marine, was in stable condition at a Yuma hospital. The cause of the crash is under investigation.